This Mariners week that was on 710 ESPN Seattle was, in a word, loaded. Shannon Dreyer here to take you through over 2 hours of baseball talk plucked from our airwaves. You're going to hear conversations with the newest Mariners, Robbie Ray and Adam Frazier. Jerry DePoto's weekly visit, we'll get that as well. We're also going to get a better understanding of the lockout from Maury Brown of Forbes, Larry Stone, who's been through this before, and others. We will, of course, hear from the host and the usual go-tos, Ryan Roland-Smith, Ryan Divish, and John Morosi. A lot to get to, and we start on Monday, coming off a big news weekend with the Mariners losing out on Marcus Semien, but picking up Adam Frazier. At that point, we were just 3 days away from the lockout, and the clock was ticking. We start on the Mike Salk Show, and yeah, for many, missing out on Semien, that felt like a loss. Salk, with a cooler head in this one, worked through the then-current situation and took it to the people.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
I mentioned today feels like Crossroads Day here in Seattle. What happens next with a bunch of these teams in town? They could go in a whole bunch of different directions. But from the Mariners specifically, just kind of talking to you guys as fans, what's going to make you happy? It's a simple question. It doesn't have to, you don't have to have a specific answer to it. You could name a specific player that you want or something like that, but ultimately, what will make you happy? What is it? Here we go. Like Pharrell says, what would make you happy as a Mariner fan this offseason?
There's a lot.
It's just the beat. Oh, it's like a loop beat to happen.
I didn't know if you wanted the extra instrumental.
That's all right.
If you
want, I was sort of hoping to hear Pharrell sing. My kids love that song.
We could do that, too.
Right, at some point. Now, let me talk to the people. We only have limited time, but... Okay, it's distracting. That's actually kind of bothering me. There we go. All right, that's distracting.
Okay.
That's enough. I'm looking through some of your answers here for everything from signing Russell Wilson to play second base to just doing whatever it is, just get in on the action. That comes from Nick. I hate that answer. To me, that's the worst kind of an answer. And I appreciate it, Nick. Thanks for texting in. He says, what would make me happy is to do something. I don't care who it is. I just want action and don't want to sit on the sideline and say we were in on deals. Really? You don't care what it is? You just want them to be active. I think that's the worst way to approach it.
So was the question, what name would make you happy?
No, just what would make you happy?
Okay.
Right? I mean, like, what can possibly make you happy? Is it that they need to sign three people? See, I want, what makes me happy is the Mariners targeting a couple of players that they specifically believe will make them better. They need two big stars. And probably 2 to 3 role player type of guys.
Sure.
I think they've got one of those role
Frazier's
player guys
role
in
players.
Frazier. I like the Frazier deal. That made me happy. So, I saw it and went, okay, that's cool. The only thing I don't like about Frazier is that he's only around for a year. That's not necessarily part of your future. But okay, that's a good deal. That makes you better. What are you going to do to increase some of the star power so that at the ends of games, like the veteran hitters that win games for you in baseball? How many times last year are you just sitting there like, I hope the lineup just comes back around to Haniger, France, and Seager because they're veteran hitters who I think are going to trust in a big spot. You need some guys who are veteran hitters that can carry your team for stretches at a time. Who are you going to go to get to do that? It's not going to be Marcus Semien. I wanted that. Is it going to be a Chris Bryant, a Trevor Story? So it's not that I need them to do anything. I need them to bring in a veteran hitter that can carry them for a stretch and lengthen this lineup. They need to replace Seager's production and improve on it. That's the goal here. You've got to replace what you lost and then start to add to it. Does Chris Bryant do that? Yeah, absolutely. Does Trevor Story do that? Of course. They are both better players, straight up better players than Kyle Seager. So right then and there, you are improving over last year.
I want them to do what they said they were going to do,
okay,
which is the next step of the rebuild.
Okay,
I want them to prove it.
That's what makes you happy.
Yeah, I want them to stay the course. If that's what they're doing, don't do the dip and dunk of the Mariners version, whatever that is right now. Go out and make those two. I want one starting pitcher and one major impact position player.
All right.
That would make me happy.
206-421-3776. Grab Jack, who's in Seattle. Jack, what would make you happy?
I would love to see one splash, and specifically, I want Story I've been on that story train for a long time. I mean, the guy had a down year, right, and still hit 24 bombs, hitting 250. And arguably, we could get him at a discount at a young guy who could play, you know, slide over and play really good third base for us. If you go into the season with an infield, you know, Story, JP, Frazier, and France with Toro as a utility guy, and then, you know, Toro could play second or third, Frazier could hop in the outfield, I think that's a really complete infield. And I know there's more work to be done in other parts of the squad, but just seeing one big signing for, you know, a guy, a right-handed bat who can play third and hit a lot of home runs. I mean, he was the, I think he hit the most home runs in his first 100 games as a shortstop or something like that.
Yeah, he came out on fire as a rookie.
You know, so I think he fits the squad really well. I'm going to say he fits it even better than Chris Bryant. I just have more faith in him going forward. But
I appreciate
that. That would make me really happy.
I appreciate it, Jack, and thanks for the phone call. And I like Trevor's story a lot. He came into a tough spot in Colorado. It's worth remembering Troy Tulowitzki was a god there.
Right.
Maura, you were there right in 2007, right, when they went to the World Series. I've never experienced anything quite like the entire crowd there going. They would do the dun, 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 too low. And like he was that franchise for a long time. And for Trevor Story to come in and do what he did, replacing him, I thought was very impressive. He came out like a house of fire early in his career. Yeah, there's some concern about the Coors Field effect. Of course there is. How could there not be? We've seen too many other guys leave there and have issues. But, you know, Nolan Arenado seemed to be the real deal and sure showed it this year in St. Louis. And so you got the opportunity, hopefully, to see the same thing from Trevor Story. That would make me happy. I would absolutely be pretty happy about Trevor Story. Sean's in Long Beach. What's up, Sean?
Hey, how's it going, Mike?
Great.
Hey, I agree with everything you guys just said. I love the Frazier acquisition, especially when we have the depth with Toro. But, you know, Jerry bet on himself when he let Seager go. Now it's time to go out and get a guy like Chris Bryant, like Trevor Story. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, even on Twitter the other day, I saw Stroman was interested in coming to the Mariners. He tweeted at JP and
how about that? Did you see some of that? Just to tell people who aren't glued to Twitter all day, J.P. Crawford. Well, first it was Paul Sewald, right?
Paul
and then J.P. Crawford, both kind of tweeting at Marcus Stroman, saying like, "Hey, man, come out to the coast. It's nice up here in the Northwest. We're building something fun." And he's
into it.
Yeah, he seemed pretty into it.
So you know, Jerry's been betting on himself. You know, like we have all this payroll, we have money, and, you know, we let a couple free agents slide. Now it's time to go out and get them.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the phone call, Sean. Hopefully you are happy here by the end of the day, because there's a lot riding on today. It looks like, I'm just checking through here, it looks like what the Mets are just about done here with Max Scherzer. So it sounds like he will end up being a Met. Man, they are spending a tremendous amount of money. We talked about them earlier that, you know, with the Kevin Mather stuff, that I think it does hurt you. I think it does hurt the your ability to go sign free agents, what he said in the offseason. But I also think it doesn't kill you. Look at the Mets.
I'm just going to say that.
Their owner's a nut. I mean, some of the things he said should absolutely destroy their ability to sign free agents. He's about to, you know what gets free agents? 3 years, $130 million. That's insane.
How old is he?
Scherzer's 38, I think.
No way.
3 years, $130 million, according to Ken Rosenthal. So yeah,
37.
Like there's money has a way of digging yourself out of some of those problems that you might find yourself in. I got a ton of texts here. I mean, like a million. It was hard to even get through it. What would make you happy? Pitching, pitching, pitching. That comes from the 253. Here's my thing on pitching. I think, and that's not to say the Mariners won't go with a free agent pitcher. Stroman is a very interesting option. My feeling all along is that I would like to see them and believe that they will acquire bats through free agency, pitching through trades.
Are you okay with pitching coming later?
No.
Okay.
Do you need pitching?
I agree with you.
You need pitching. Pitching is what wins. You need pitching. And you can never have enough of it. Remember what happened to the Mariners?
You also need to score runs.
Yeah, pitching. You need pitching. Starting pitching is what everything in baseball is built on. You need pitching, and you need it as much of it as you can get. So I have always felt like this offseason will be about free agent bats and trades in the pitching market. I think Jerry gets nervous, and I think understandably so, to sign veteran pitchers to big-time long-term contracts. Right? I think it's really hard to project what a pitcher is going to do over 6-7 years once they've already hit free agency, which generally means they're at least 29, if not 30. I don't blame them. That's where you end up with, like, Felix Hernandez broken down at the end of his career. And the problem is, when pitchers get old and broken down, they're unusable in ways that bats, it just doesn't happen for position players. Broken down expensive pitching is a franchise killer. Broken down expensive bat, you can kind of hide him. You can move him to DH.
Right.
Maybe there's something you like to make him pop through for a little bit and have a good run. Once a pitcher is done, they're done. So I would love to see them continue to spend money in the free agent market at position players, and that's why I'm with you on Trevor Story, Michael Conforto, Chris Bryant. Those three names are all really interesting to me. Would I be excited about Stroman? Sure, on the right deal. Yeah, of course, he's a good pitcher. I'm never going to say no to a good pitcher coming to the Mariners, but I'm much more excited about dealing with the Oakland A's for one of their starters. I'm much more excited about dealing with Cincinnati for one of the starters that they have there. I think you've got some real opportunities if you're the Mariners to get better, use your tradable assets to acquire pitching, and use your money to acquire hitting. Now, what we also have learned, and I thought this was fascinating last week, is you can do both. You can use your money to trade and acquire pitching, right? Take on a contract that another team doesn't want, and in exchange, bring back a younger pitcher that you think has value. Maybe it's with Baltimore. Maybe it's with Cincinnati. Maybe it's with Oakland. I love that idea. You just got to go find a way to do it. So there's lots of things left here for the Mariners to do, and today may not be the deadline, but it's kind of the deadline.
Well,
they're going to lock this thing out on Wednesday. And if you haven't gotten your deals done by the end of the night tonight, you may not be able to get them done until who knows when this thing ends. By the way, why in the world are they going to lock out their players? What is happening in baseball? How stupid are these people? People, like, they're all, I saw Buster tweeting about this, and I totally agree with Buster only. This system is working so well that right now every free agent and owner is willing to cut a deal under the current system. It's working.
Right.
Why are you going to blow this thing up? That seems ridiculous. This is working. If nobody was signing right now and it was like a vast wasteland where everybody was waiting on one side or the other, either the free agents were refusing to sign or the teams were refusing to offer them good contracts, then you would say, yeah, clearly something is wrong. One of these sides is so upset that they can't possibly exist in this system. But both sides are showing right now they are okay in this system. What in the world would make them blow this up? Come up with an extension. Do something to avoid a lockout. You're obviously close enough that you can both function here. I hope that both Rob Manfred and Tony Clark have a good sense that this is possible moving forward. I know it's a side note. I know we're more focused on the Mariners, but geez.
Yeah, kick the can one more week, maybe.
Gosh, do something, because obviously it's working right now.
What was the report we saw yesterday before, maybe this week, about Bryant maybe wanting to wait until after?
Maybe.
Lockout?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are players that we thought would wait until after the lockout because they think that there may be a better climate for them. But I think that's the unknown. Right now is a known quantity. You know what you're getting. Who knows what's going to happen after the lockout? Who knows? 206-421-3776. You can text. You can call. What would make you happy? Let me quickly grab Kevin in Port Orchard. Kevin, go ahead.
Good morning, Mike. Hey, I don't really mind the Frazier deal, but here's what I hate. I hate that the Mariners in this regime are always talking about, let's get guys that are flexible that we can move second or third or short or left field. I want to sign somebody so good at their position that we don't have to talk about moving them. I want an elite third baseman or an elite left fielder or an elite shortstop, not somebody that, because I feel like if we're moving them around, then they're not that great at that position for us to leave them there.
I understand what you're saying. You got to have a little of both, though, Kevin. I like them looking for guys that are flexible, and I think Ben Zobrist and some of the guys over the last few years that have helped teams win World Series, that flexibility is more and more important in baseball. And you see it certainly with the Chris Taylor and the Dodgers, and you've seen it with the Rays. A lot of the teams that have been the best teams in baseball have moved their players around quite a bit in the last 5 years or so. I think it's become more and more common. That's not to say that you shouldn't get a couple guys on your team that are solidly put wherever they are, but I think the Mariners believe that over time, that's Kelnick. That's Julio Rodriguez. Yeah, you probably need one more here. That's J.P. Crawford. That's one more. And the next thing you know, you got four or five guys set on your team every day, and then you do want some of that flexibility because baseball is about matchups, right? It's about getting your lefty against their righty, or your guy who hits sinkers against their sinker ball pitcher, whatever. And having that positional flexibility, I think, is of enormous importance to them. There are moments, and I know we got to go to need to know here in a minute, but I'll say this quickly. When you see a guy platooning who hits 400, the next thing to do is not to complain that the manager isn't playing them more. You should be saying thank you to the manager for putting that player in a position to hit 400.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
The guy lefty who you're protecting against lefties because he can't hit them very well, and he hits 400, and the next thing I always hear is, well, why isn't he playing him more? He's hitting 400. No, he's hitting 400 because of the way he's playing.
Manager put him in the position.
And if he put him in a different position, he'd be hitting 220, and you'd be complaining. I love the positional flexibility. That's not to say you don't need a couple of guys that are so good they don't move. You write them in. You know where they are every night. They do need those guys. But I'm not mad at the flexibility. No.
Good stuff from Salk. Now, speaking of flexibility, the newly added flexibility, Adam Frazier, a couple of hours later, joined Jake and Stacy with Curtis Rogers sitting in for Stacy.
Joining us here on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, he is the newest Mariner. That'd be second baseman Adam Frazier joining us. Adam, I imagine it was a crazy weekend for you. First off, I want to say welcome to Seattle. I hear you're not in Seattle proper just yet, but over the Thanksgiving weekend, you get the call that you're getting traded. I imagine it was crazy hectic for you, at least over the last 48 hours or so.
Yeah, thank you. It was a crazy holiday weekend. I wasn't really expecting to get traded, but I'm pretty excited about it. And Seattle's got a great young club and good ball club, so I'm happy to be joining these guys, and I'm looking forward to getting out there.
Now, in your brief conversations over the last couple of days with those in the Mariners organization, what have they been like? Have you been able to talk with manager Scott Servais or general manager Jerry DePoto? What have they told you about where this ball club is headed?
Yeah, I've talked to both of them. We've had some good conversations with each of them. They're very excited. I know we're trying to add a few more pieces to the puzzle, and that's where we're at. So the same thing is just, good young ball club, and I'm excited with the direction, coming off a good year last year, but not quite getting to where they wanted to go. So it's just a lot of excitement in the air is what it feels like to me. And I can't wait to join up with that and try to get us where we want to be.
Now, Adam, your playing style, kind of a throwback in terms of your approach at the plate. You're not a guy that's going after the launch angle, which has become so popular in baseball over the last, I would say, decade or so. You're a guy that likes to play all across the field, spread across the field. Where does that approach come from, and just how have you been able to kind of zig while others have zagged over the last, few years in Major League Baseball?
Yeah, I guess it's just part of, understanding who I am as a player, as a hitter. I'm not that big guy that's, going to hit 30 homers or something like that and try to launch it out of the ballpark. So I'm just trying to stay inside the baseball, hit the ball where it's pitched, use the whole field, like you said. And when you can use the whole field, it kind of limits the holes in the strike zone and, it makes it tougher for pitchers to pitch. So, that's really what I'm trying to do, drive the ball to all fields and be a tough out. So, in the past when I've gotten in trouble is when I've tried to do too much. So I just try to stick with who I am and be a tough out.
Adam, I always find it fascinating as an athlete where everybody's story in terms of how they find the news out, what the transition's like. It's a lot of things that, everybody else doesn't think about. It's, did we acquire this player or not? Can they help us win or not? But what was it like for you going through that process of hearing the news for the first time and then now having to think about that transition from San Diego now to Seattle. Where's your head out in all this?
Well, when I found out, I was actually in bed Saturday morning.
No way.
So a little bit of a surprise. I'd heard a couple rumblings earlier in the week, you know, and then a few days go by. So I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I knew San Diego was going to make some moves, but I didn't think I'd be the first one to get moved. So that was pretty cool to be wanted by Seattle. I know they tried really hard at the deadline last year, and I almost ended up there, according to some higher ups. So to be there, now is, I'm pretty excited about it. But it was a whirlwind Saturday for me. And it took a little while, to kind of process what had just happened, I think I'm starting to grasp that now and, start looking into where to live in Seattle and that kind of thing. So it's all coming in, and I'm excited about it.
Well, that's good, Adam, because now you got the off season to kind of digest all this, right, and kind of figure out your situation and get set up. So that's good, man. Well, we're pumped to have you here. It is really exciting to know that you're going to be coming here. And you're right. We did try to snag you, try to get you here to Seattle earlier. Couldn't make it happen for the second half run. But we're definitely excited that you're going to be a part of this thing here in 2022. What is your impression of the organization so far? I know, Curtis asked you about, initial conversations, but watching what this young team has done up to this point and knowing where they want to go.
It was a lot of fun watching those guys in the second half last year. You could tell by, just the emotion showing, and the guys playing together that they're pretty close knit. So I actually played ball with Kendall Grademan in college, and see him emotional when he got traded out of there kind of told me a lot about the group and the organization that is there now. So a lot of young guys too. So that'll be fun. They seem very hungry about getting after it and winning some ball games. So I'm looking forward to getting in there and going to battle with those guys. But just a lot of excitement is my first, observation of and the conversations that I've had already. It just seems like a lot of excitement around the club and then in the city. So I'm looking forward to that.
Adam, you mentioned, having conversations about where the Mariners are as an organization when you weren't even a member of the organization. Is that something that gets talked about a lot in Major League Baseball clubhouses? Like, man, that team over there, if they add a couple of pieces, watch out for them. Or, man, I like what they're doing over there. Are those conversations you guys have throughout the season? I mean, obviously it's a 162-game season. You're going to be talking about anything and everything with your teammates. But is that something that you guys have noticed over the last couple of years as the Mariners sort of build here with their farm system and now it's sort of rounded out with their major league roster?
I wouldn't say so much, being elsewhere and you're trying to worry about what you got going on each and every day. But you see it. So you see the excitement from the fans, the city, how hard teams are playing and how engaged they are, especially down the stretch, because you can tell by watching some other teams that they might not be fully engaged down the stretch and they fall off. So you got to worry about what your own game that you're playing, but at the same time, you see what's going on around the league too.
Adam, I know that you can play a lot of different positions, but real home for you is at second base. How excited are you to play amongst a couple of Gold Glove talented infielders as well with Ty France and J.P. Crawford, the opportunity to flip a couple double plays with those guys?
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I'm trying to add one of those to my collection at some point. Looking forward to getting ready to work with Perry Hill as well. I've heard great things about him. And J.P. and I, we played together, in the fall league back when we were young, I guess. So I'm looking forward to playing with him again. He's a really good player. And everybody else, too. That's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Great defensive team to try to hop right in there and pull my weight as well.
Adam, Major League Baseball free agency going crazy the last couple of days, and obviously with the lockout looming in the next couple of days, we're probably going to see more and more signings. Mariners fans right now, I think they want to know, are you going to do your part and help recruit some of these guys here to play with you guys in 2022 and beyond?
I'm going to do everything I can.
Love to hear it.
I just want to win some ball games, you know, and I think a few of those guys could help us out a lot. So, yeah, definitely.
Adam, what has been your favorite stop so far? I mean, you know, obviously minor leagues, major leagues, there's so many different places that you've been to and you've seen so far in terms of your stops. What has been one of your more favorite stops so far along your journey?
Well, I guess I'm probably going to go with San Diego. You know, that place is like living in paradise, so I'm going to have to go with that. But, yeah, and I would say Seattle, but I've only been to Seattle three days.
Adam, it's okay. You don't have to pander to us that much. We totally understand if you said San Diego. There's a reason why Russell Wilson lives there in the off season.
Yeah. So that's a good place to live. It's pretty down there, but I've heard great things about Seattle in the summer too. So I'm looking forward to that.
Now, Adam, I can hear the drawl in your voice. You're from the South. You are an alum of the Mississippi State Bulldog baseball program. They are the reigning College World Series champions. How awesome was it to see the program that you were a part of that helped shape you as a baseball player come out victorious in the College World Series?
Yeah, that's right. It was, you know, when I played, we lost the national championship. So to see them get over the hump and knowing what that means to the community, because it's a small town in Mississippi, and the fans and the whole community and everything, they just breathe baseball down there. So for them to get over the hump, it was kind of emotional for me. And then I was just so excited for the organization, the fans, the community, and everything, everybody involved, because it was, it was pretty unbelievable to watch that.
Adam, we had a unique experience and still watching a lot of young guys make that transition from the farm system up to the bigs, and seeing how that gulf, that divide from really minor leagues to the bigs is so huge. When did it feel like for you? How long did it feel like it took for you to feel like you finally found your footing and that you were confident at the plate at the big league level?
I like to say or think I was confident when I first got there, but then you get on a roller coaster and you get humbled pretty quickly. So, you know, it just comes and goes, or it came and gone for, you know, I felt like up and down the whole first 3 years of my career. But then you kind of figure out how to play the game and understand, you know, how pitchers attack you and how catchers pitch you and that kind of thing. So it took a while. I mean, it's the major leagues for a reason. It's really hard to get there and it's really hard to stay. So, it's a tough game. You got to take it one game at a time.
Adam, you got the honor this last July to represent the Pirates organization at the MLB All-Star game for the first time in your career. What was that experience like as a first-time All-Star, being around the game's best and really playing under those bright lights that, you know, not many players ever get to play under, you know, during their baseball careers?
Oh, a lot of fun. You know, the dream come true. Something you kind of, you know, grow up. You want to make it to the major leagues, but you want to be an All-Star too. So that was really a dream come true. It was, you know, it was a blast being able to play with, you know, some future Hall of Famers and those kind of guys, and just pick their brain a little bit and have fun doing it. So, hopefully you can try to do that again this year, because, you know, that'd be pretty cool for the team. And, hopefully we can replicate that.
Good to hear from the newest Mariner on the Jake and Stacy Show, where they broke the move down and what it meant about an hour later, with Jake still looking for that big get. Curtis Rogers, happy to oblige with some big breaking news.
Headline rewrites.
The Mariners acquired second baseman Adam Frazier from the Padres in exchange for a pair of prospects. What's the real headline?
Real headline, the baseball equivalent of your parents telling you you've got Marcus Semien at home when it's the store brand version. it's not the same.
I like that we had him on the show and you're still calling him
yes.
the Superman version.
I mean, come on. Curtis, he's a friend of the show.
Great
now.
Guy. Friend of the show, Adam anymore. Frazier. I give my friends the hardest time.
Right? Yeah. Yeah,
that's right. Actually, that is very true.
I tease because I care. I love those who I tease.
Sometimes it doesn't feel like it. I'll just say that.
Tough love.
You know?
Tough love.
But... Adam Frazier, you're getting the tough love here, not because we don't think of you as a great player who was an all-star last year, but because it doesn't necessarily address the real serious issue that is still lingering with this Mariners lineup right now, which is true impact bats, true power bats. And Adam Frazier, if you want to make a comparison to anybody on this roster right now, is very similar in their approach to J.P. Crawford.
Hey, Jake, you want to... I love your eyes, Curtis.
Sure,
you want some breaking news here?
Yes, give me some breaking news.
Jeff Passan of ESPN reporting that reigning AL Cy Young Award winner Robbie Ray and the Seattle Mariners are finalizing a five-year, $115 million contract.
What?
With an opt-out after the third season. Robbie Ray, we just talked about him.
What?
Saying, I think earlier in the show we said, yeah, weird how we haven't heard anything about Robbie Ray. He's coming to the Mariners. How exciting is that?
That's pretty dang exciting, if you ask me.
You got a Cy Young Award winner in your rotation now.
Yes, you do. And, Curtis, this completely is shocking because we have not heard Robbie Ray and the Mariners linked together throughout this entire process. And so this is a move that when you're talking about the Mariners being aggressive, being serious in the process, Robbie Ray, adding him to your starting rotation, that is a major move for Jerry DePoto. That is a major move for this Mariners organization. And when you talk about the criticisms about them being aggressive or not being aggressive, not willing to spend to truly better this team, well, here you have it. The Mariners going out and signing Robbie Ray. Man, that is a big impact signing for the Seattle Mariners.
It is, and it is a tone-setting move for your organization this offseason. And we talked about guys like Ty France and Mitch Haniger who have publicly stated, like, hey, let's go out and sign some big names. Robbie Ray, a Cy Young Award winner, led the American League in strikeouts last year with 248, 193 innings pitched. He's been a strikeout pitcher for the majority of his career. He's got four seasons of over 200 strikeouts in his career. And this year put it all together for Toronto and was incredible for them, winning the Cy Young Award and being an anchor of their rotation. I mean, you look at what he can do in every fifth day, this is a rotation anchor. This is somebody who you put at your number one spot, and you say, you know what, we've got a great shot at winning every time he's out there. And 5 years from now, he's entering his age 30 season. So, I mean, he'll be 35 years old when this contract runs out, significantly younger than Marcus Semien was, or will be when his contract runs out with the Texas Rangers. So, hey, Robbie Ray, I mean, coming to Seattle, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I am all for it.
Are
and
you?
I don't, and especially at that dollar amount, 5 years, 115 for him, not a bad move. Not a bad move at all.
Not a bad move, and obviously he had a monster year this last year. The one question I'll throw to you, Curtis, is what do you think about the questions of the consistency, right? I mean, this being a real true breakout year for Robbie Ray, Have you seen enough that you could really bank on Robbie Ray kind of having that same level of production or close to it, really truly being that anchor in this rotation?
I think so. The one season of his where he had some struggles was 2020. But look, the 2020 season was one where you could pretty much throw out anything that happened that year. It was so crazy. You know, had the 60-game season. You can't really draw a lot of conclusions from what you saw that season. He bounces back this season, 32 starts, 193 innings pitched, was one of the very best pitchers in baseball. You look at his numbers throughout his career in Arizona, won 15 games in 2017 with an ERA under 3. You know, he's got a 12-win season in 2019 as well. I mean, this is a guy that has gotten the job done more often than not in his career and has now and really has avoided any kind of injury bug in his career too. And he wears very tight pants. That is something that Mariners fans will probably latch on to, will become a very interesting thing amongst the fan base here. So I'm looking forward to what the rest of the offseason has for the Mariners if this is their first big...
Curtis, this is huge. Are you kidding me? This is huge. I mean, you're looking at Jerry Dipoto standing there and everybody going, look, we did miss out on Marcus Semien. There were other guys that you missed out on. But this is the signing that you were hoping for would happen, and hopefully this is a domino that is just going to continue to keep rolling here for the Seattle Mariners as they're closing out. They've got a couple days left. I expect continual big moves here happening for the Seattle Mariners. This is just the first.
You want to get Mariners insider Shannon Dreyer on?
Yeah.
Let's do that next.
There's actually some really cool video on the 710 social media accounts of Curtis seeing the news in real time and Jake's reaction. If you haven't seen it, I encourage you to go look for it if you kind of want to relive the moment. Very, very cool stuff. Now, I joined the show shortly after, and I had to give Jake a hard time about all of the worrying.
Jake, I think the person that I am the happiest for right now actually is you. And putting together the Mariners week that was, the last 3-4 weeks, every single, it's just almost every appearance, there's, I'm uncomfortable, I'm nervous about this, I need to see something, I've been very worried about you, Jake, and today, I can hear it in your voice, I think you're feeling a little bit better.
Oh, Shannon, thank you so much. I am feeling relieved, and I know I'm not the only one, Shannon. There's so much anxiety that gets built up, and here's the thing, Shannon, I go through the process, and trusting what the Mariners have done, I've liked what they've done since they've torn things down and gone through the rebuilding process. I want to trust. I want to be there with Jerry Dipoto and this ownership group. But as you saw those moves start to happen, you start to become worried and the anxiety starts to increase. Shannon, you told me and Stacy last week that you got to stay patient and you got to trust. And look at you. Look at you. Always right.
I also told you to look out for the team that goes and spends stupid, and we've certainly seen that since. And I'm not saying it's a bad move. I'm just saying that they lost their minds and spending a lot of money. But, you know, the Mariners have had all sorts of options, and what has been a lot of fun in watching this, and I guess some of the anxiety you had was perhaps not trusting in how they had built this up and that they had so many different directions that they could go in because of the flexibility they had with the players that they have and because of the flexibility of the payroll that they have. And I think that what we were a little bit nervous about was, and not seeing anything so soon, was, will these free agents take the money? Well, you now have the reigning American League Cy Young saying, yes, I will take that. I will come to Seattle. I will play for at least 3 years and be a part of an organization that is, you know, on the rise right now, that is building up. And it's, I think that when you look at a lot of the deals that were made and how outrageous they are for the quality that you just got in Robbie Ray, this is a reasonable contract. These are good terms for the Mariners. So, you know, that patience, I don't know if it's been a matter of patience. You know, obviously this deal has not come together in the last 24 hours, but it's a plan, and it's a plan that they've been working on for a long time, and they set themselves up for this kind of thing.
Now, as it turned out, that deal did come together relatively quickly, not in 24 hours, but a matter of days. We're going to hear a little bit more about that later in the podcast. But my point there was, he was an option they were prepared for. And because of their flexibility, there were and still are many, many options. Let's hear a little bit more about Robbie Ray from Ryan Roland Smith. That's a lot of R's. And, of course, one hyphen.
Great, great news. I was getting a little worried there's going to be, yeah, and that, look, nothing against Fraser. I like that move too, don't get me wrong. But, you know, and it's not this thing where you have to have this big splashy name, whatever, anything like that. But you just don't want to see these kind of marginal, hope they work out kind of moves. You want to see something like this, especially a long-term deal. And, you know, you start to see these players going left, right, and center before this lockout, you know, that's about to happen here in a day. And next thing you know, the Mariners have got the guy who was the best pitcher in the American League last year. It's a fantastic move. I'm stoked.
Ryan, when you look at who Robbie Ray is as the pitcher, the kind of pitcher profile he has, what makes him so effective in generating strikeouts?
Well, I think, first of all, Robbie Ray, you go back, he was drafted by the Nationals, and I've heard him talk about this quite a bit. And I was trying to, you know, I heard that you guys wanted to talk to me about 20 minutes ago, so I was texting a few people who know Robbie Ray pretty well. I didn't quite get the information that I need to to get to your guys' level right now on the show. But basically, just from doing a little bit of a dig in the last couple of months and just watching what had been the difference with him. First of all, he has been through some adversity, has been through some struggles. I love that, because now he's a guy that it's not like all of a sudden he was just dominating every single year and here he is. He's been through some stuff and he's figured out what works for him. One of the things too, when you watch Robbie Ray pitch, you see that spike in velocity. He made some mechanical adjustments that he had to go all the way back to when he was first drafted. He's with the D-backs and the D-backs were tinkering mechanically with him. And he was going back and forth. But all of a sudden this year, he's like, you know what? I'm going back to what feels comfortable. And one of those things was staying, you know, over the rubber, having a bigger base on the lower half. And I think when you grab something like that and it just feels right and it feels like you, man, all of a sudden you just roll. And we saw that. He pitched in Seattle during the year in that tight uni, those pants. I love it. Couldn't pull it off myself, but he was so fun to watch. He was just so in control. You knew he was going to go deep in the game. He has multiple weapons, one of the lowest batting average of balls in play, as well as the strikeout numbers. There's just a complete package here, and he's still 29 years old. So I love the move and what we're going to get from Robbie Ray.
Ryan, I love the fact that you point to the fact that he has been through a lot of adversity and how that actually can be a positive, because I know some people are going to look at the stats and they're going to look at it and say, look, you're paying a big money to a guy who just had a breakout performance. Is that really who he is moving forward? And how can that be a case that you could make that he is going to be this guy over the next 3 to 5 years of his career here with the Mariners?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Look, it's one of these things, you go, well, he's only had one good year. But when you kind of dig into, first of all, Nationals, then he's with the Tigers. He came up, and then he went to the Arizona Diamondbacks, and he showed flashes. And they talked about how so high on Robbie Ray because of things he could do. But there's always that situation where it wasn't so much injuries. Look, he's had a couple. He's had a back spasm, you know, an oblique, nothing crazy. But when you watch a guy, and I watched him because he's a left-handed pitcher, and I love watching pitching. I love it to see guys have success. When you all of a sudden see some of the adjustments that he made or went back to, it just looked like him. And when I say having the adversity, it's not a situation, like I said, where if he comes in, this is his first chance of being a guy in a rotation, the frontline dude, 5-year deal, everything else. So when you have these moments in your career, and I'm sure you've had plenty of them, and so have I, when you've had these moments where you've struggled, and now all of a sudden in 2021, you know what those little mechanical cues or those mental cues to go back to what you know feels right and what you're able to do, that's the best. It's not something where you're wondering or you're trying to figure it out or you haven't had any of that adversity, and you come in as a 29-year-old into a team where there's so many big expectations, and then you just get lost. And you've seen that plenty of times as well. So I just think the fact that he's been through that, and look, as far as, you know, having one good year or whatever, you go back, man, there's been flashes of brilliance too. There's been some streaks there where he has been really good. And this year, man, it just, every time he went out, he just got better and better as the year went on. And on top of that, the add in the velocity, everything he talked about, the preparation he did in between starts, all these little things, man, that rub off so well on some of the younger players coming up as well.
Ryan, when you look at the Mariners' top four right now in their rotation, Robbie Ray, Marco Gonzalez, Chris Flexen, Logan Gilbert, where do they rank among the rotations in the American League West?
As far as the American League West, definitely up there. You know, the Houston Astros, not only do they have, obviously they've just been to a World Series, but yes, they're going to have solid, solid overall. We all know that. And they've got guys in their system that come up that are going to be solid as well when you're talking about rotation. I still think that they rank better than the Angels, even with Noah Syndergaard. And that's the situation. Look, if let's say the Mariners were signing off on a $20-something million with Noah Syndergaard, I wouldn't feel too good about it because of the track record and everything else. It wouldn't quite make sense. But I think when you look at the rotation as far as the things that really, really matter, the things that set your bullpen up, innings eaters, guys who get deep into games, that's going to be crucial with this bullpen. They leaned so heavily on that bullpen last year, and I still feel like they've got moves to make. But innings and consistency, man. When you have a Chris Flexen and you're looking at him as potentially being a number three or number four behind Robbie Ray and Marco Gonzalez, two guys who get deep, man, it just takes such strain and pressure off that bullpen, having to make those guys expendable, having to lean on someone come up from AAA to fill a gap or someone hitting the IL or whatever it may be. And you know they're still going to add to that bullpen. I just think that it's just such a good recipe. And depending on what they do offensively, I still think they need to lengthen that lineup out. But everything that, basing on 2021, the depth, when you're talking getting deep in the games and having that consistency, is huge.
Ryan, that is my next question in terms of where the Mariners go from here. Obviously, everyone focuses on addressing the lineup, and rightfully so. And as you just mentioned, you hope that they do so with some serious impact bats. But the next question is, are the Mariners done seriously addressing their starting rotation? Is this their move that they make and let the other final starting rotation go to somebody like a James Paxton, or leave it open so that they can give somebody like George Kirby or one of the younger guys an opportunity there with that rotation?
I think if they're gonna be competitive in 2022, you have to fill that out and say, this is our five guys, as opposed to saying, all right, we've got our four and see who the last spot, who it's up to. You still have to bring someone in. And I think you mentioned, James Paxton, I don't think he's going to be healthy right away to be ready to roll. But I think there is enough out there regarding starting pitching. I mean, that you can get on a one-year deal to fill up that last spot and that make those younger guys earn it. When you're talking about, Kirby and talking about some of these younger pitchers coming out of AA and AAA or what have you, they have to earn it. They have to break in the right way. You don't ever, when you're a competing team, like the Mariners are hoping that they're going to be in 2022, you just hand them a job. It just doesn't, just never works out. They have to be able to earn that. And you see all these really good teams, you see these young players come up because they've dealt, dominated, and they've forced their way into the rotation. I still think the Mariners need to finalize that rotation, get someone else who's rock solid in that fifth spot. They do need to get offense. They're definitely not done. I'm hoping. It's crazy, this lockout date tomorrow has just created a whole frenzy. It's going to make things interesting. Definitely have to fill that lineup up, lengthen that thing. And they also have to, you still have to add in the bullpen, strengthen your strengths. I see, someone like a Kirby Yates, who was with the Padres, who just had Tommy John. He's coming off Tommy John. He was on my podcast and just talking to some of the adjustments he's made. He's cheap. It's not going to cost you a bunch of years. And he is a proven all-star closer, a guy who can fill up that bullpen. So I want to see two more big names in the bullpen. That's super important. Get another starting pitcher that's someone who's a year, you give them a year or something like that. But I still feel like they have to do some big things with that lineup also, just along with Robbie Ray, same kind of thing.
So, Ryan, do you see more of the Mariners going with like a one-year deal type of starting pitcher here to round this out? Or do you think somebody like a Marcus Stroman, who they were linked to early on in this process, could still be on the table for them?
Yeah, I see it more of being a situation, and this is, there's a couple of reasons for this. Number one, you do have some guys you don't want to have a roadblock for it down in AA and AAA. Some of the prospects you mentioned, Kirby, for example. So I see it more of being as far as starting pitching is concerned, I see it more of a one-year type thing. I think that if you're going to go, and that's the other big thing too, just Semien, it's all about years. That all these guys, they want years, as well as obviously they're making a lot of money, but it's not so much the annual what they're making. It's more about the years for some of these guys. I see them as far as pitching goes. I see a 1 year deal. Don't create a roadblock where you round out that rotation with some of these young guys who are going to be really impactful, even in a couple months into the season. And you really focus on putting the extended contracts into something offensively. And also to add, look, even, I know everyone's agreeing with this, and it's a no-brainer for a lot of people, but even bringing in Nelson Cruz, bringing some clubhouse presence for a one-year deal to add some thump in that lineup, or something. You have to generate some pop in the middle of that lineup, lengthen that thing out, and then just, I would stick with a 1 year in the rotation.
Ryan, obviously the big news of the day is the Mariners signing of Robbie Ray, or at least the agreement to a signing with Robbie Ray, which will get finalized over the next couple of days. But over the weekend, they made another big move in acquiring second baseman Adam Frazier from the San Diego Padres. When you look at that move, where do you think the Mariners will go next offensively, and what do you think Frazier brings to the table?
Well, I think, you know, with Frazier, it's not this, you know, big thump in the middle of the lineup. But, man, again, you just see that on base. A guy who can get on base, as boring or as, you know, we're sick of hearing the term versatility. But, again, it pays dividends, man, when all of a sudden you're having this roster turnover, or you're having so-and-so hit the COVID IL or whatever it may be. Having that is massive. And the fact they didn't really have to give up really anything to get someone like Adam Frazier at the top of that lineup, or even essentially down the bottom too. Frazier's a guy who can, depending on where they go free agency-wise, that 7-8-9 was a black hole for the Mariners in the lineup, 7-8-9. Man, if you can throw in some doubles, throw in some on base down the bottom of that lineup when you flick that thing over, it just makes so much sense. So I can see that Adam Frazier being on either end of the lineup, even down the bottom as well, gives you that versatility. But again, I still feel like even with that move, not giving up a whole lot, you can still go out and make a massive impact, getting someone who can be in the middle of the lineup, a big impact as well, besides the Frazier move.
That is something that we surely would all love to see, and see the Mariners stay aggressive. Ryan, thanks for joining us, man, to break this down. This is always a great time having you on.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys. It's been a while, so it's good to get back on the airwaves.
A huge move in adding Robbie Ray. You'd love to talk about it all day long, but we had Monday Night Football. The next reaction to the Mariners' big move would come from Mike Salk Tuesday morning.
Thankfully, we have much better news to talk about this morning. Robbie Ray coming to Seattle. This is awesome, right?
Yes. Thank you, Mariners.
What a savior. For sure. Yes. It's like Jerry playing the role of Paul Sewald, stepping in for the save to make sure we're happy and sunshine and puppies this morning. But look, Robbie Ray is legit. Let's just start with that. He is legit. It is a very good signing. It is a really good contract. $23 million a year for 5 years is a very good deal for a 30-year-old
Cy Young winner.
Yeah, and by the way, he has an opt-out after 3 years. If he opts out, it's an even better deal. I mean, you're getting him. He's 30, right? So you're getting him for ages 30, 31, 32 for sure. That's like the prime of his career, right? That's not overpaying at that rate. And then if he sticks around for two more, you get ages 33 and 34, not 37 and 38. That's a really big difference. And you think about the fact that, you know, we heard yesterday the Mariners offered 5 years to Marcus Semien. Okay, well, he went for seven. He's what, 31? So those are his ages 37 and 38 seasons that they were unwilling to pay for. Look, do I think they should have done it? Probably. I think they probably should. If he was their number one target, you probably should have. Yeah, I think so. What? So you eat an extra $50 million. Tough. Like, I to me, that is the money you saved in the past. Go spend it now and say, hey, that's the money we saved on Cano. Instead, we blew it on Semien. Okay. I think they should have tried to match, if not beat that. But, okay, they didn't want to do that. This is a really good deal for a guy that misses a ton of bats. Like, he will strike you out. That is the one thing you can guarantee about Robbie Ray. He comes in to strike you out. Some of the numbers that you've heard, and these will be all over the place, the most strikeouts to start a career, first 1,000 innings of anyone in history.
Jeez. Wow. And he chews up a ton of innings.
More than Pedro, more than Felix, more than Randy Johnson, more than Nolan Ryan, more than Roger Clemens. Now, those guys pitched 1,000 innings in like their first 4 or 5 years. He did it in like his first seven. Like, it took a while for him to get going, but it's just a tremendous number of strikeouts in the career for Robbie Ray, and he led the league last year with like 250, just under that. So the strikeout numbers are enormous. He had a little bit of a slow start to his career, came up from Arizona, or I think originally in Detroit and then Arizona, and it wasn't until he got to Toronto that he seemed to just kind of figure something out. I guess he made some tweaks to his delivery. Whatever it is, it worked. He was the best pitcher in the American League last year. Now, maybe not by leaps and bounds, but, you know, along with Shohei Ohtani, he was one of the two best pitchers in the league for sure, and really had a great deal. So for him to come here, I think is awesome. He immediately slots in atop your rotation. I don't know if he starts opening day or not, or if you just kind of throw Marco some respect based on what he's done here the last few days. But, you know, Robbie Ray, Marco Gonzalez, Logan Gilbert, Chris Flexen, that's your top four.
Well, think about, too, the lineups he's going to be throwing against. Look who he's used to throwing against now. Like, he's been pitching against the Yankees. And
he's been
Rays
in the AL East.
I know the Rangers and I know the Astros are going to be tough to throw against, but at least he comes in with that experience.
Hey, that's a really good point. The AL West may end up being the AL East when all is said and done here and all the money that's being spent in this division. But, yeah, so that's going to be your front four. What do you do with your fifth spot? I think there's a couple of ideas. First of all, I would go after another premier starter. Castillo? I just want to be clear. Huh?
Castillo?
I'm totally down with any of the Reds or A's starters that are out there, whether it's at the top of the list like Manaea or Castillo, or if there's somebody maybe a little bit farther down on one of those teams' depth charts. I don't think you can ever have enough pitching. As a last resort, and I'm sure that he's not like signing immediately, so this is an option open to you, a reunion with Tyler Anderson. Right, bring him back for another couple of years. I thought he pitched really well down the stretch for the Mariners.
Yeah, he did.
Just he's a fifth starter kind of guy, and that gives you some of the depth that you need as you're waiting for Brash and Kirby and Williamson, all of which are likely to pitch in the big leagues this year. Sterling Hancock is a possibility at some point this year. You still have Dunn. Maybe he bounces back. You still have Mark Gavishas. He bounces back. So, yeah, I think you have some depth, but there is nothing more important to contending than pitching depth and pitching health, and they obviously work together.
Paxton, anywhere in this? Would you try? I mean, it's depth. I know he's not really
it's
longevity.
If they're a one-year proven
discount,
deal, maybe at the major league minimum or something like that. I don't think you need to take that kind of chance right now if you're the Mariners. Just because you know James Paxton doesn't mean he needs to be the guy.
Yeah.
Like, there are other options out there. But, yeah, I do. You can never have enough. If you want to throw James Paxton at the end of that, that's fine with me. Start with your four that you know. I would add a fifth. I would be perfectly content if after this they still ended up getting a one of these other starters from the A's or Reds we were talking about and got Tyler Anderson.
Yeah.
And, sure, sign a James Paxton for the minimum and have Dunn and have Mark Gavishas and have your double-A guys.
Yeah, because I'm worried about those double-A guys you said being trade pieces.
Well, or that, yes, some of them, for sure, if you do end up going with one of those deals, yes. Or they don't all pan out.
True.
And they might not, and certainly not
exactly.
As a rookie. Do you want to be counting on rookies in a year where you're now trying to contend?
We've done that.
You want to try to slide them in and see how it works. And you know you're going to need at least 8, if not 12, starting pitchers to get through a year. At least 8, maybe 12, maybe more.
Maybe Sheffield turns out.
Well, let's not get carried away. Come on, early in the morning.
Sheffield could be my
Rashad early in the
Penny
morning.
Here.
He was mine. I really thought you were going to get a good year from him. So, yeah, you know, that's where you're at right now for the Mariners and their rotation. All of a sudden, it looks much, much better. And now you got to go turn your attention to go get a bat. I believe Robbie Ray was their top pitching target. I don't know if he was their top target. I think they're obviously their top guy that they wanted was Semien, and it didn't work out. So, okay. So now that you didn't get that, what are you going to do? You still have the need. You need some pop. You need something in your infield. So is it Story? Is it Bryant? It sounds like Baez maybe is moving towards Detroit, so that maybe that's not – which is fine, by the way. Of all the options, that was the one I was interested in the least. Maybe it's Matt Chapman still. We've talked about him from the A's. It sure seems like the A's are waiting. Like, just not quite – they're kind of, we'll see what we're going to do, and we're going to kind of hold on. And maybe they're waiting for people to be left out here in the musical chairs and then say, hey – if you got left out, we've got such and such, and yeah, we're going to jack up
price
the price because of it. Yeah. So, look, you want to finish off an offseason right for me? Here's what you do. You go trade for a pitcher, right? Another good starting pitcher. Sign a back-end starter like a Tyler Anderson. Sign one of these guys. Let's say it's Trevor Story or Chris Bryant. I know that's not, like, easy, but yeah, do that. And then go get a Michael Conforto to add a little depth to your lineup. Yeah, now you're talking about a team that is legitimately better than you were last year, contending for the playoffs, and maybe beyond that. So, yeah, I think they've got a lot left to do and a lot of opportunity to go do it. Today's the day. So, like, you know, go seize it, Jerry.
You know, Sox Sites reports that the Mariners were willing to go just 5 years on Semien. And others have said that, too. I'm not calling out Sox by any means on this. We kind of learn things as time goes on. I've done some digging around, and for what it's worth, I think there was at least talk of a 6-year. I don't think there was an actual offer. We know they didn't meet face to face. So I think they got knocked out of this early. I think they saw it was going well beyond where they would go. But I think that 6 was a number that they would have been comfortable with, or at least willing to go. That is what's significant here. I feel pretty confident they're willing to go 6 in the right situation. Something to watch for. Something else to watch for, according to Salk, spending more dollars.
Were Mariners fans really thinking they weren't going to do anything? Was that like really a thing yesterday? Mariners fans panicked that because like 4 free agents had signed,
no,
the Mariners weren't going to do anything?
Just the same old Mariners people, which don't count.
Gosh. I mean, no, it wasn't fans in general, just a segment of the fan base. What'd you think? They were going to have like a $50 million payroll? Come on. Jerry has done what he said he would do, like really throughout the entirety of this rebuild. And while there are things to criticize in the history of the Mariners, right? The history of the Mariners is to be marginally cheap, maybe on the extra player, and to maybe make a lot of bad decisions, bad draft picks, et cetera. That's part of their history. But it's never to have a bottom tier payroll. It's one thing to have a narrative about a team, and maybe it's true, maybe not. But this one's just exaggerated. That's not even the right narrative. The Mariners are never going to do anything because they're too cheap to do so. That's not who they are. They had like the, what, 10th or 12th highest payroll in baseball a few years ago. They're not the Red Sox, Dodgers, Yankees. That's true. But they're not the A's or Rays either. Like, they're a
Pirates
team that spends. I don't really understand where all of that comes from. It just, to me, is not true. I love what they did yesterday. Robbie Ray is legit. $23 million, 5 years. That's a good deal for a 30-year-old. It's even better if he ends up opting out after 3. This guy, you know what he does? He strikes you out. Like, what Robbie Ray will do is he will absolutely strike you. I got some numbers here. So he strikes out over the course of his career 11.2 batters per 9 innings, okay? Meaning every 9 innings, he's struck out more than 11 batters. His best season, it was a few years ago, he struck out 12.1 K per 9, okay? So keep those numbers in your head. Understand that they are the best in the history of baseball among qualified pitchers. The best in the history of baseball. He has the most strike, the highest strikeout rate per 9 innings.
And it's not a small sample size.
No. He's thrown over, what, 1,000 innings, right? I mean, that he is the best strikeout person in the history of baseball per 9 innings. You want to comp, again, his career is 11.2. Roger Clemens, he seemed like a pretty good strikeout guy to you. Roger was an 8.6 strikeout per 9 guy in his career. His best season was 10.4. So if you're thinking like, oh, well, he struck out a lot of guys and then it tailed off at the end, he had to change. No, his best season was 10.4. Randy Johnson, pretty good strikeout guy, right? Now, his best season was better, 13.4. But Randy, for his career, 10.6. That's pretty good. Randy's like top, what, 5 all time?
6.
Pedro Martinez, pretty good strikeout guy. I know the Mariners know that as well as anybody. Pedro, 10 strikeouts per 9, 13.2 was his best season. I think that was 99. Nolan Ryan, pretty good strikeout guy. You like Nolan Ryan?
You did okay.
9.5.
Who doesn't like Nolan Ryan?
9.5 K per 9, 11.5 was his best season. So it's pretty crazy. I mean, you match Robbie Ray up against some of the all-time greats. It's not exactly the same. I mean, people are striking out left and right now. I mean, the game is just so different with the way it's being played. But what a great free agent signing in terms of his ability to go out there and strike you out. He won the Cy Young Award last year. Now, are the Mariners done? No, they're not done. I don't think they're done at all. Now, I don't know whether they're going to be able to get anything done before the lockout happens tomorrow night. I can't speak to the timing, but I don't think the Mariners are done. And every conversation I've had with people in and around that organization tells me they're not done. They know they need a bat. I think their first priority was to try to get Semien. Didn't work out. He gets 7 years. We heard Mark Feinsohn report yesterday that they offered 5. Do you go 7 years? I would have. Yeah, I disagree with them on that. But I can't tell you they did it wrong. I just disagree. I would be willing to go there because I think you saved some money in the back. And I would just say, well, rather than looking at it as 7 years at, what was it, 25 a year or whatever, I would look at it as 5 years and then take the extra 50 and add them to the 5, if that makes sense. Like, yeah, I would just say, well, it's a 5-year,
$200 and add that money to it. Yeah.
Whatever.
Okay.
So instead of paying him 25 a year, you really kind of look at it as like you're paying him 30 a year or 40, whatever the number is. Because I don't care. It's not my money.
pretty easy.
To
finish the Robbie Gray thing, Chris Sale's number two, by the way, on that list of the career strikeouts per nine. Yu Darvish, 3. Jacob DeGrom, number 4. Max Scherzer, 5.
Yeah, it's not a surprise. It's not a surprise that it's all of the guys that are fairly recent just because of the amount that players strike out now.
8 years in the league.
You just don't have contact hitters. You got guys swinging for the fences.
Yep.
I think it's a good point. If Nolan Ryan or Roger Clemens or anybody else like that pitched in today's game of baseball, Randy Johnson would strike out, like, you know, 30 per nine.
Yeah, Randy Johnson's number 6 on this list.
Yeah. Can you imagine if he played in this era? How many strikeouts Randy Johnson would have? Yeah, it's ridiculous. So I'm not trying to say that he's a better pitcher than the career greats, trust me, but he's really good. And in this era, he's still the best at striking guys out. That's what you need. Starting pitching wins, man. Starting pitching wins World Series. Starting pitching gets you there. Now you need to go fix your lineup. You got to go replace the production you lost in Kyle Seager and actually make it better, improve it. Chris Bryant would be an improvement. Trevor Story would be an improvement. Matt Chapman would be an improvement. Okay? You need to go replace that power that you lost at third base, and there's 3 options, 2 of which are in the free agency market, and 1 of which is in the trade market that would help. So I think they're on that. But you think yesterday people thought the Mariners were like didn't want to play? Now what, you're worried that they don't want another guy for their lineup? Of course they do. I think they're going to get one. I don't know who it's going to be. I don't know whether it's going to be one of those top 2 free agent names, meaning Bryant and Story. But I think they understand that they've got to improve the lineup. They didn't let Kyle Seager go for fun. They think they can do better than that. They think they can get somebody who can have a similar amount of power, similar defense, but with a higher on-base percentage. And that's essentially what Chris Bryant is.
Robbie Ray is going to strike you out, and Salk feels good about adding a third baseman. Okay, time to hear from Ryan Divish, who was a guest on Jake and Stacy on Tuesday.
Ryan, how you doing?
I'm good. How about you guys?
We're hanging in there, man. We were feeling anxious. The anxiety was increasing, and then Jerry DePoto and the Mariners made us feel a little bit better yesterday.
Threw us a bone, yeah.
So,
yeah,
right.
I mean, it was probably like Stelton at his high school prom, you know, everybody's getting dates and he's sitting around looking and hoping, and all of a sudden he finally gets one and it actually happens to be a pretty good looking girl. I mean, Stelton, it always works out for him in the end.
I think that it's
that was during his grunge days.
That's right.
So
that's
I could see why he would struggle back then.
Lead singer days. Ryan, so what do you make of the move that the Mariners made yesterday, the splash move of Robbie Ray?
You know, I really liked it. I didn't know that he would be a candidate for them. I honestly thought he would probably get more money just considering how dominant he was and coming off a Cy Young season. I think there is some hesitation because of the walk issues in the past. But, you know, in reading all the stuff about him, it sounds like he figured out what was wrong with his command and we saw the benefits of it. It seems like, you know, and it happens to put pitchers at different times where it kind of all comes together and they figure out who they are and what they have to do to be good. And I think that's where he's at. So I was a little surprised. I knew they liked Gausman. I know they liked Marcus Stroman, but I just didn't know that Robbie Ray was on their radar as much. And what's crazy too is like he was the Angels' top priority. And so, I mean, you know, Jerry DePoto and his history with the Angels, sticking it to Artie Marino and those guys, I don't think hurt his feelings one bit.
Ryan, you look at the Mariners' rotation right now, slots 1 through 4 pretty much locked in with Ray, Marco, Chris Flexen, and Logan Gilbert. That 5th spot, still up in the air. Guys like Tyler Anderson, they're still available. And then obviously you mentioned Marcus Stroman's name. How do you think they're going to address that spot in the rotation?
You know, it'll be interesting to see how they go, if they want to invest more money. I think right now the priority is still adding a hitter. You know, I think Tyler Anderson is always going to be there. You know, they can wait till after maybe the lockout, and Tyler Anderson will be there. I think, you know, they can also, I would try and sign James Paxton to a 1-year deal and just elevate, you know, have him as an insurance policy, you know, because he probably won't be ready till about May 1st. So, you know, you have him there getting ready. You have the youngsters in Sheffield and Dunn. You have Kirby and Williamson who are a little farther off. And then you have Matt Brash as well. And you can start Matt Brash and Tacoma and not rush him in perhaps the way that they had to do that with Logan Gilbert this year. So I think, like, you know, they should add one, and they still should add, like, should add a James Paxton, because it's just such a low risk deal, and he clearly wants to be in Seattle. They should do that. You know, bring him back. If you can get him on a 1 year, $1 million deal with a lot of incentives, it's a show him, it's a show me contract for him. So I would do that. But, you know, and if they can't get all the pitching they want, they can always go get a pitcher at the deadline. I think they have enough back of the rotation arms to fill the spot, and you can get better. But, like, right now, they have to figure out the hitting aspect, because they really need that.
Ryan, how shocking is it to you that the market has just heated up the way it has before this lockout? I mean, I you know, when Jerry came out of the GM meetings, it was, hey, you know, everything's going to be business as usual. It's turned out to be pretty different.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if, like, having a signing deadline wouldn't be better, kind of like the whole NFL free agency thing where it all happens in, like, 3 days and then you're done. I mean, as a writer, I would love it if it was all done in a week and then I could just enjoy the off season. But no, I think the artificial timeline of the lockout and some players just wanting to know where they're going to go, and other teams worried that, like, if it became a frenzy in the last 2 weeks of the season, that they might get left out. I think that all kind of factored into all of this. And again, you also have fewer teams that are, you know, trying to tank or trying to rebuild. You know, the Rangers decide they want to spend money. The Tigers decide they want to spend money. All of a sudden that adds more people in there in a class where there's a lot of good players. So, you know, the demand for players is higher because more people are willing to spend.
Ryan, two bats that I think a lot of Mariners fans have interest in right now, and I think the Mariners have also had some varying levels of interest this offseason in, are Chris Bryant and Trevor Story. Of those two players, who would you project to have the better numbers over the course of, let's say, the next 5 years or so?
Huh. Well, I think Bryant's a year younger or 2 years younger. I'm not certain. It's hard to know with Story and the effects of playing at Coors Field and what he'd be like when he doesn't have that kind of always there. Like, you know, you could go on a road trip and have a bad road trip, but know that you're coming home to Coors Field and you're probably going to get some hits and probably get some production because it's such a hitter-friendly place. I mean, his splits aren't egregious like some players, but, you know, he doesn't have maybe the positional versatility either that Bryant has. I don't know. I mean, like, cause I haven't exactly been wowed by Bryant's numbers over the last few years since the MVP season. You know, he's been good, but he hasn't been great. And that's something you wonder about too. Like, if you're going to, he's a Scott Boras guy, and if you have to give Scott Boras years and dollars, is he really going to be that kind of middle of the order bat that can carry you? Because you have to realize too, like, even if you add Chris Bryant, Mitch Haniger is likely gone after this year as a free agent. And then you're looking at a bunch of kids and Ty France trying to carry that load. Maybe you can get another free agent next year, but, you know, it's just not, I don't know that he's a carrying bat. I thought of all the hitters on the market that Marcus Semien was the carrying kind of guy that you could put him in there, but he didn't seem very interested. From all my sourcings, they didn't even get a face-to-face interview with Marcus Semien. That they were not in his year projection or the dollar projection that he wanted. I think the Mariners probably said, look, we're willing to give you a 32-year-old 5 years, but seven's a bit too far. So I don't know. I think either one of them would help. But if either you get either one of them, I still think you got to go get another guy, whether that's trading for Matt Chapman or if it's, you know, it's looking at one of the Reds hitters or, you know, looking at somebody like that on the market, or go get, say, a Suzuki or Nick Castellanos or somebody. Like, they got to get somebody else, because I just don't think adding one of those guys to go with Adam Frazier is enough. And I said this on our podcast with me and Larry Stone. I'm not surprised if Jerry Dipoto trades Adam Frazier before the season even starts, because he's the type of guy at a 1 year deal, not very much money, $8 million, you could put in a package to get a player that you need as well.
That would definitely be an intriguing option that we'll have to wait around on, unfortunately, with the lockout coming and looming. Ryan, one of the other names that we're hearing and really haven't talked much about, but is certainly out there, and I think his market is heating up, at least according to reports, is the Dodgers' Chris Taylor, former Mariner. Do you think that the Mariners are seriously interested in Chris Taylor, and would that be a good fit here?
Yeah, I think they are, for the right price. I mean, Chris's numbers really took a header towards the end of the season, and I don't know what the reasoning is. you know, he is older. He can play all the positions, which they really covet. But I mean, I guess if I was Jerry DePoto, I traded him once for Zach Lee, and Taylor became this great run producer for the Dodgers. Then you bring him back on a big deal. You better know that it's going to work and he's going to be productive there. You could have made a mistake with Chris Taylor twice, trading him before he got good and then giving him a lot of money when he wasn't good. So I think, you know, if the numbers are right and it matches, yeah, I think the Mariners should take a look at him. But I don't think he's a game changer hitter the way that even Bryant or Story are. I mean, Story is, you know, those guys are productive hitters that are a higher level than Chris Taylor.
Ryan, this offseason, we've seen some minor trades. Obviously, the Adam Frazier trade over the weekend was notable here in Seattle, but we have not seen really any big names get moved. Do you think after the lockout ends, we're going to see more trades, or is this just kind of an offseason more tailored towards free agency?
Well, I think that the free agency thing was going to dictate the market a little bit, like for the Mariners, for example. Like, they, you know, whether or not they got Simeon or Bryant or Story or whoever that they wanted to get, if they don't get them, then they have to visit the avenue of trading, because then you're giving up prospects, you're not just giving up dollars per se. So I think that's part of it. And I think also here the teams like the A's and the Reds, and you're looking to trade, you know, if the A's are looking to trade Matt Chapman and Matt Olson and the three pitchers, or the Reds are trying to trade Sonny Gray and those guys, you kind of want to, you're looking for prospects. So you want to know what the CBA is in terms of player control of these prospects, because that's going to matter, like how much club control you have. Say you get a rookie or a player with 2 years of MLB service time, and all of a sudden you're losing him in 2 years instead of five or six. That's going to matter in terms of how you rate the prospect value of a player. So I think that's another reason why some of these teams that are looking to dump players may wait, because the return and what they get in return could be changed by what the CBA parameters are.
Yeah, that'll be definitely really interesting to keep an eye on. Ryan, one of the other names that I've kind of been surprised hasn't had a hotter market, or at least publicly, is Seiya Suzuki, the Japanese hitter who has posted a great career in Japan. Obviously, the Mariners were rumored and are rumored to be interested in him. What is his market like, are you hearing?
Yeah, I think that his is dictated on the other market as well. I mean, obviously, I think it helps him now that Starling Marte is off the board. If you look at this class, it's not a great class of outfielders. You have Castellanos and a couple other guys. And there's also some question about how the posting thing is going to work under the, you know, with the CBA, with MPB, and all this other stuff. And then there's that time frame of when you start him. So I think that, like, with him, you have a 30-day window once he's posted and you win the posting rights or whatever to sign him. I think they're just going to wait till after, because I don't think they know, like, they weren't even certain if the posting, the 30-day window would stop while there was a lockout and all that other stuff. So I think that's had an effect as well, as like the uncertainty of how the posting process is going to work and the time frame and the time limits, that it has been an issue for Suzuki as well.
Ryan, we've had our focus on the top-tier free agents over the last couple of weeks as they continue to go off the board here. But are there any free agents you see out there, maybe on the second or third tier, I don't know, like Kyle Schwarber, for example, that would be of the Mariners' interest?
Yeah, I mean, like, in past years, you'd look at Schwarber and say, sure, of course you want to take a chance. You know, you play him, you hide him a few days at first base, and you have him fill the DH role a little bit more. And if anything, Schwarber's value is sort of decreased, because there are going to be 30 teams of DHs. You would think it would go up. But, you know, Nelson Cruz and Schwarber are both on the market. And, you know, teams now, you're not limited to 15 teams where you can say, oh, these 15 I want to go to. I mean, like, he's a good piece, you know. But for now, they have to look at guys that they know they can play every day. And with Kyle Lewis expected to come back, they need that DH spot to play him there at least four times a week. I just can't see them playing him in the outfield, you know, five, six times a week, whether it's left field or center field, because you don't know what that knee is going to be like, and you just don't want to take the risk of injuring it again when you can control it by having him DH more often than not.
Ryan, last question for me here. You know, Ryan Roland Smith came on with us yesterday. He threw out the idea and conversation about continuing to keep adding to the bullpen. What do you make of that? Is that something that you think the Mariners will do at a high-profile level, or have they found their niche in terms of getting guys on the lower end of the market and turning them into something.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to really go on the high-end guys. It isn't a great class. I think you have to look at it, too. You're adding Andres Munoz and you're adding Ken Giles to your bullpen. So that gives you two guys to go with Steckenrider and Sewald and, you know, another arm that they have in the organization. He's coming back off of Tommy John. And we'll be ready, I think, by midseason is Roannis Elias. And that guy was very valuable to them a couple years ago as a reliever, as a swing reliever who could pitch multiple innings and get you strikeouts, pumping 95, 96. They have him on a minor league deal, so they can bring him up. You know, and even like something like, If they were to add another starter, another veteran starter, and they didn't need necessarily a starter, you know, that they felt comfortable with their depth, then maybe they move Justin Dunn, whose stuff tends to tick up in one inning spurts, to the bullpen, or they even, you know, to bring Matt Brash along slowly, they pitch him out of the bullpen for a few times. That you have arms there. I just don't think it's a priority. To me, I would rather have them address outfield depth, get a better center fielder, move Kelenic around, understand what you're going to do with your DH, add a starting pitcher, or even more infield depth. To me, I think that's bigger than adding arms to the bullpen, because you can always find them. And I think DePoto told me they have five guys with MLB experience that they're hoping to sign on minor league deals, three of whom who came to the Mariners because they saw the success of Sewald and Steckenrider and believe that the Mariners can help get them back to where they want to be.
Tuesday was a good news, bad news type of day. The good news, the deal was not yet official, but they were about to sign Robbie Ray. The bad news, the lockout was looming. Wyman and Bob's weekly guest, El Hombre, Michael Bradley, addressed both.
So what's the feeling out there as you watch the team in your division? You hate them all in terms of baseball. The New York Mets just unloading truckloads of money. Max Scherzer signed, and I'm always leery of pitcher deals regardless of their 27 or 37. It's just that the pitchers throwing as hard as they do, you're ready for an injury at any time. This is a guy who's going to be paid $43.3 million per year. He's 37 years old. He's a brilliant talent, but had dead arm at the end of the year. Boy, this feels like a huge gamble. Could be huge, but would you be stunned if all of a sudden he was having arm issues and everything with the Mets?
That would be a tragedy.
I know you'd be upset, certainly.
No, it would be horrible. No, I thought the same thing. Unless people, you know, except for the Roger Clemens, Randy Johnson, 39, 40, 41, you know, probably illegal substance-induced binges that people had, you don't see pitchers at 38, 39, and 40 winning 20 games. Scherzer's good. He's going to be good. He's going to be very good sometimes, but as you said, there's a chance that he's not going to that he may have some problems, and there's a big chance that he may not give you 30 starts that you want. The Mets had to do something though. They collapsed this year. It was a mess. So it's a big risk. But here's the thing: the owner Cohen, $43 million. It's not like he's sitting there going, oh, no, I'm eating ramen for the next couple of years. He's got it to spend.
Boy, you just look at that, though, for a 37-year-old pitcher, $43.3 million per year. My goodness.
Unreal. And it's I think that the each yearly total is higher than the salaries entire teams, four or five other teams, are paying. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Michael, what do you think about all of these rapid, frantic deals being signed before this labor lockout? And why does it seem like this one won't be as bad? I mean, there are perceptions that, okay, you know, 94, canceled everything. We had one a couple years ago, it was bad. This one, all the talk is, well, it'll only be a month or two. So what makes this one different?
I think that they're going to be arguing less about how the money is going to be split and more about things like increased playoffs, maybe trimming a year off the service time necessary to become a free agent.
DH in the National League.
What's that?
DH in the National League.
Yeah, you had to bring that up.
It's coming.
Yeah, so now we go to slow pitch softball in the NL, too.
Oh.
You guys have had it over there in the junior circuit for about 50
years. Nothing more electric than watching pitchers go up there and whiff.
You know, there's nothing more electric than watching strategy in baseball rather than everybody just playing video games, right? When you got to make a double switch, when you got to decide when you want the pitcher to come out because he's up to bat.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Then it's real baseball. But anyway, the last thing is, do you think they're going to come up? They may also try to, the players may also push for this, an end to this. Hey, we hold you out for 12 games, and that takes an entire year off your service time.
Yeah.
So I think that's what we're fighting on. There's pension issues that are going to be there. A professor from Purdue last year told me a lot about all of this, what the main issues are going to be. So I think that there's a boatload of money. And come February 1st, that's when the spring training clock starts to tick. Come March 1st, when there are actual spring training games, where ticket revenues will be given away, where television givebacks may have to happen, merchandise won't be sold. That's why I think people think it's going to be shorter, because this is off season, not in season.
Isn't it amazing to watch the amount of money being thrown around out there for a sport that everybody talks about? The fan base is dwindling every single year. The attendance is dwindling, just in terms of revenue generated. Then you look at a team like the Texas Rangers. For two players, they're shelling out $500 million for Corey Seager and Marcus Semien out there. So money is there. It's interesting to hear the woes of everybody surrounding the sport, yet you see the amount of money being tossed around very freely and easily. Tells a different story.
Well, it's all because of TV.
Yes.
It's all because of TV. And here's the thing. They better enjoy it for the next, 8 to 10 years, as long as these TV contracts are in. Because once we get into the next round and the streaming services start to come in, the problem with streaming services getting the making bids on sports is, especially baseball, is with an older fan base, streaming is going to be not the same as turning on a TV and punching an 8547 into your remote control, right? You're going to have to have a TV that can handle the streaming services. You're going to have to understand how to use them, where to get the games. So it could, if I'm Hulu or Amazon Prime or whoever's going to be making the bids for baseball. Now, NFL, the younger fans will find it, the NBA, et cetera. But for baseball, I got to think, is the 65-year-old guy in Walla Walla going to be able to figure out where to find the Mariners home game with his smart TV, or is he going to be like my mom used to be, where she would call me up and say, I pushed the wrong button and I can't get anything on my television?
You drive over and fix it for her?
Drive over and fix it. Although, I did it a couple of, when my son got to be a teenager, I hand him the phone. Grandma's having problems with the remote, talk her through it.
As soon as he got his license, drive over there, fix it for her.
No, not drive over there. This kid was able to talk her through it on the phone.
Oh, that's
he was,
good.
Okay, tell me what you're looking at right now. I'm listening to somebody speaking in Russian.
So I pushed the wrong button. I can't get it back. Hand the phone to the son.
What am I doing?
By the end of the day, no new deals for the Mariners, but the Ray contract was signed, sealed, and delivered. And the newest Mariners' first stop was on the Mike Salk Show Wednesday morning.
Well, we're going to have a big baseball hour coming up here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Jerry DePoto will join me in a half hour at 8:30. Robbie Ray here in just a moment. New Mariners pitcher, reigning Cy Young Award winner. Really excited to talk to him and just excited about the next season here for the Mariners. Get to meet Robbie now, and then he'll have a press conference a little bit later this morning. So the assembled media will get their opportunity to chat with him as well.
First crack at it.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty cool. So we don't really know much about him. I know he's a Tennessee guy. I know he's been with a few organizations. But he joins us right now in the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Robbie Ray, newest Mariner, reigning Cy Young Award winner. Hello, sir. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How's it feel, man? How's it feel to be in Seattle and to be the newest Mariner?
Yeah, it feels really good. This whole process, everybody, the front office, Jerry, Justin, speaking with Scott, ownership, they've all been great in this whole process and, helping us get to know the Mariners and learn a bit more about the city. And it's just been a really fun, a really exciting process.
Are you someone who involves yourself in it, or you just leave it to your agent and say, hey, call me when we got a good deal somewhere?
No, we had meetings, Zoom meetings, sat down and talked with Jerry and Scott and Justin, and it was an extensive meeting, and we sat down and talked about the direction of the team, and talked about the vision for the future, and man, they just really sold me on it.
Well, that's a cool thing to hear, and I think Mariners fans like to know that it's not just the money, that there's an element of wanting to be a part of this organization, that we've spent some time watching the rebuild happen and going through the hard part of it. Now that they're coming up on the other side of it, it's really comforting to hear that there are players that are buying into that vision as well. Was there one part of it that made you say, yeah, this is the place I want to be, and this is the right vision for me in the future?
I think it was just the culture, the winning culture, seeing the guys last year, what they were able to put on the field, seeing the young guys come into their own and kind of realizing who they are as baseball players and as men. And, just seeing it from across the field and, you know, hearing post-game press conferences about, you know, the way that things were going in that clubhouse. And, it was just something that you look at and you're like, man, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Are there players or people in the organization that you know previously?
Yeah, so I played with Mitch Haniger in Arizona, and me and Kyle Lewis have the same agent, so we're connected through that. But those two are probably the biggest name guys I know on the team.
Well, with Mitch,
guys like Marco and Tom Murphy, they both reached out to me when they heard the news, and you know, they're excited, and you know, I let them know I was excited as well.
The Mitch thing is especially interesting just based on the article that he wrote in the Players Tribune. I think it really captured a lot of the Mariners fans' attention, and we've heard everybody on the team who's been interviewed since commented on it as well. And this idea that you know, the rest of the league better look out. I got to imagine that a conversation with Mitch took place before you signed here.
Yeah, we talked about it. And man, he's passionate. He was in it. He was in it last year, and he felt the energy from the fans that last week of the season and that last homestand. Having 45,000 fans, he felt that energy, and he could feel that push that the fans were getting behind him. And he said it was infectious, and he wanted more of it. And you know, to hear that from a guy that has gone through the rebuild process and coming out the other end of it. You know, saying that he felt that way about the city and about the team, you know, it just makes the decision a lot more easier too.
That's cool. You mentioned ownership as part of that. You know, part of that ownership is Ken Griffey Jr. We were told he'd do a little recruiting. Did you get some junior access as a part of this process?
No, I wasn't able to, but I'm sure there'll be some conversations had in the future.
You got to put that into the contract. You got to demand some junior access as a part. Like, hey, I want this much money, I want this kind of a no trade clause, and this much access to junior.
Oh, for sure.
Hey, we're talking to Robbie Ray here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Another similarity with Haniger that you mentioned there is, look, he wrote in that story about some of the issues he had coming up and some of the changes he needed to make in his own career in order to really accelerate it and move forward. You really seem to have put it together in the last couple of years, but especially last year. We just had such a dominant season. What was different for you last year?
Yeah, so, you know, I feel like I've always had the mindset of I was going to go out and attack guys. And I felt like I had the stuff to do it, but the physical and the mental didn't match up necessarily as well as I wanted it to. I felt like I was always searching and always trying to build and always tweaking a little bit. And there was just something missing, and it was the consistency with my delivery. And I feel like in the off season, putting on the weight, the good weight, getting in the gym, getting after it, and then really focusing on a delivery that was repeatable and that was consistent, that was going to allow me to consistently get to the same spot every single time, is what made the difference for me.
So is that like a way to create a consistent release point, essentially?
Yeah, so the release point is huge. I mean, I didn't want to get into too many nerdy things, but...
Well, I was watching some of this online. It looks like you have a little bit more. I mean, I don't really understand all the pitching at that level, but a little bit more of a turn, almost akin to what Felix used to do at some point while he was here.
Yeah, that was something that I had done previously back in the minor leagues, and just slowly over the years got away from it. And, you know, as I said, I was trying to make those tweaks and changes. You know, you slowly get away from things that you had success with, and when you're trying to search and build and get better. But, you know, for me, it was getting back to that and getting back to that turn and feeling strong and feeling like I was driving down the mound and staying close long enough and you know, really giving myself a chance to you know, get the ball out front. And like you said, consistent release point is huge. Having the same release point on fastball and slider, because those are, you know, my two best pitches, was key for me.
How do you maintain it? I mean, what is the maintenance process to ensure that this keeps up for you?
Yeah, it's just continue the process. I think the gains that I made in the offseason, I'm continuing to do that. I'm continuing to get after it in the gym. I'm continuing to, you know, ingrain that delivery, that turn, everything that I did in the past. I'm just continuing the process.
All right, we got to get to know you a little bit, too. We're talking to Robbie Ray, newest Mariner here on 710 ESPN Seattle. I think we know a little bit now about, you know, what you are as a player and why you're here. But we got to find a little bit about who you are. Tell me, you've got all these strikeouts, right? What is the best way to strike someone out? Does it feel better with a fastball, with a slider? What feels the best?
Man, I don't know. Every strikeout feels pretty good. getting to an 0-2 count, 0-2-1-2, and just absolutely burying a guy on a slider who thinks the fastball is coming is a really good feeling.
So you like the swing and miss versus like a big chainsaw strikeout call from the ump?
Yeah, I think I'm more of a swing and miss because it's like, hey, I got you.
I like that. All right. And I know that you hear this wherever you go. I feel bad. I feel like a lame radio host even asking about this, but I have to. Like, I'm contractually obligated. What's the deal with the tight pants, man? Everybody talks about when it comes to you and your name. What's up with the tight pants?
Yeah, so, you know, again, I talked about getting into the gym and putting on the weight and getting stronger and getting bigger. And, you know, my pant size didn't change. And so I just kept the same pant size. And in spring training last year, guys were just giving me a hard time about it. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to do it because you guys hate it. And then it became my thing. It became, you know, going into the season, it kind of became a part of me and a part of my game. And, you know, it ended up working out.
Is it distracting, or is it sort of like the whole Bull Durham thing where, like, you know, he's thinking about something else and it seems to help him a little bit?
I don't know. I think it's a little bit of an intimidation factor. You see a guy come out onto the field and his jersey is a little snug and, you know, he's a little bit bigger guy. And I don't know. Maybe there's a little bit of an intimidation factor.
Now I know I'm getting old, man. I'm 43. Like, I'm at the end of Gen X. Like, when I was in middle school, high school, college, like, if your shorts and pants weren't the biggest they could possibly be, you look like you were a relic from the 70s. It's like everything has completely come around full circle on all this. It's amazing.
100%.
What? Where do you keep your Cy Young Award?
You know what? I haven't gotten my trophy yet, but I'm looking for a good place to put it right now. It's probably going to go in my man cave with the rest of the awards that I get, and I'll find a good shelf right in the middle for it.
What did that mean to you to be honored with that award?
It was huge, and you know, to win almost near. You know, near unanimously, just even speaks more volumes to, you know, the season that I had. And it just validates everything that you do. I spoke about it before, but, you know, I felt like I put together the season. I felt like I did everything I needed to do. I you know, went out and did it. And but to have your name called at the end of the year for the Cy Young Award, it just validates, like, yeah, you did it.
What about your family? I see you're married. Kids yet?
Yeah, I got three kids.
Three kids? Oh, my gosh. That's a lot of kids. How old are they?
They are 6, 4, and almost 2.
Man, so you're kind of right in the middle of it. My kids are just a little ahead of you. I got 10 and 7. So you're right in the middle of a lot of it. What do they think about the move? Are they excited for the trip? What's all that been like?
Yeah, they're excited. My oldest son, he kind of gets it now what dad does, and it's really cool to see. And you know, when I broke the news to him and told him where I was going, and you know, he was excited, and he was like, Mariners, and you know, it was a really cool experience to be able to tell him to that. My daughter and other son are a little too young to kind of get it, but my older son, he got it, and he was excited about it.
What do they think of the teal, or are they more of a fan of the blue Mariner? I am anti teal. I've been very much on the record here. I get ripped for it, but I would ditch the teal. Repeal the teal has been my campaign. Where do you stand on the teal uniforms?
I actually like teal, so I'm not a I don't dislike it at all. So I think it brings you know, it just brings an extra, you know, color into the mix, and it kind of meshes really well with the dark blue.
But we saw it last year. Tyler Anderson, I think, only wanted to pitch in the teal uniforms, and I heard somebody suggest that you preferred the Blue Jays uniforms. Is that true? Did you mostly pitch in the blue uniforms last year?
Yeah, so the royal blue uniforms was pretty much the only jersey I pitched in last year. There may have been a couple times earlier in the season where we were on a hot streak and I rode out a gray uniform or maybe the white uniform, but I think for the most part I just wore royal blue all year.
And is that something you, like, how does that go? Who do you talk to about something like that? Like, hey, I really want to pitch in this uniform. Can you make it happen? Is that like the clubhouse guy? Who do you talk to?
Well, in Toronto, it was just up to the starting pitcher that day. It was decided by whoever was pitching that day. And, I felt most comfortable in my royal blue jersey last year, and so we just ran with it.
I like it. Well, you seem like a really good dude. It's nice talking to you. Really, really happy for you. I think Mariners fans are ecstatic to have you here. We're really excited about where this thing is going, and I think people bought into this idea of a rebuild, knowing that what would come out on the other side would be better, the farm system would be better, and just, you know, last year was a lot of fun watching that team maybe compete above what their roster level was, and I think we're so excited to see some real additions to it. So congratulations. Welcome to Seattle. We're looking forward to it, Robbie.
Yeah, me too. Thank you.
Nice conversation there. I had a good opportunity to chat with Robbie for about 10 minutes after the press conference, and it's just so interesting how this all came together, and what an interesting fit that this is going to be. It almost feels like he fell in the Mariners' lap, but this wasn't a situation by any means of him falling to the Mariners, if that makes any sense. Let's hear a little bit from Jerry DePoto, who followed on the Mike Salk Show.
What's up, guys?
Well, a lot. You tell me. I mean, you're the one who's had a heck of a week. What has it been like over the last week here?
It's been a blast, really. I know since obviously we weren't able to talk last week due to Thanksgiving, but you know, from picking up Adam Frazier to obviously now signing Robbie Ray, we did a fun extension with Andres Munoz. It's been a very active couple of weeks here, and in between a ton of flights and Zooms and meetings with various free agents. And it's really interesting to get to know people you didn't know very well before. So it's been a great couple of weeks.
I want to talk to you about all that you've done. I want to quickly ask just for, so that we understand, you know, we got this deadline kind of hanging over everybody tonight at 9 o'clock Pacific time. Is there still time to do any other deals now before that deadline, or is that time passed?
Oh, no, we can absolutely do deals. And that we're still approaching this as if, you know, today is another business day. And, you know, we've got our hands in a couple of different trade talks, and we're still engaged with a few free agents. And, you know, I can't say one way or the other whether we will get anything done, but I also wouldn't say it's impossible.
Well, that's exciting. That's a reason to keep listening over the course of the day and checking Twitter and all of that. How happy are you with where the team is at and what the roster looks like after those two moves?
I'm really happy. Obviously, we were the ones who did it. So in the moment, I feel like it would have been disingenuous not to have a smile on my face. But we went into the off season with the goals, and we expressed them, you know, pretty publicly, and we've been able to knock or check a few of those boxes, especially with adding Robbie to the top of the rotation, and, you know, Adam joins and really makes that lineup longer and gives us a solution in the infield at second base and gives us that versatility that we coveted. So all in all, I'd say the progress we've made to this point in the offseason has been real positive.
There were a bunch of arms that were available. Why Robbie Ray is the one that you chose to target?
I think presence, physical stuff. It's we have a rotation that we think is underrated, but we're not a big strikeout staff. And, you know, with the exception of Logan Gilbert, that's just not what our guys do. And, you know, Robbie Ray is as good at doing that as any starting pitcher in the big leagues. As it works out, perhaps, you know, over the course of his first 1,000 major league innings, maybe as good as it ever has been as far as striking hitters out. So he's a bat misser. He's durable in an era where that's not common. He's able to chew up innings and go deep into games. And, you know, the left-handed presence in a rotation with that kind of physical ability. And really, I think a
the guy to pull the sled as much as anything. We've got leaders in our clubhouse that have evolved over time, you know, but when other teams walk into the ballpark, you know, we've often, this 2021 season was emblematic of it. They leave thinking, wow, the team is better than I thought. Well, our goal is to put a team out there that is, you know, that when they come in, they feel like this team is pretty good. We better be ready.
Yeah, that I totally get the goal. What is left in order to accomplish that?
You know, we want to add the one more bat and minimally one more bat. We think there's potentially room for two, but, you know, it depends on where that bat lies. And now we have the flexibility of focusing on the offensive impact, wherever that might land. And that's what the Adam Frazier acquisition really does for us. We would like to continue to add depth to the starting rotation. If there's an opportunity to add that one more arm there, that would be great. So we still have, whether that be, you know, via free agency or trade, we're open to all avenues. But those are the things we'd still like to get done.
I assume when you say you're looking to add a bat that, and just looking at the lineup, that power or run producing rather is important in that player.
Yeah, you know, we feel like JP and Adam Frazier and to a degree Abraham Toro, they're your table setters. Now you need your run producers. And, you know, we are focused on more the middle of the order, that power, you know, type presence in a lineup. And hopefully we're able to bring it to Seattle.
You know, obviously we've seen players that have signed that fit some of that bill. And I don't know, you know, I don't want to speak to the truth of stories about length of deal and this and that. But is the length of a deal important to you right now?
The length of a deal is always important, and it's part of what we assess as we go into it. And, you know, I can't say that there's anything that's happened in our negotiations that has been concerning in that regard. Obviously, we've gone, you know, 5 years with Robbie Ray. We've done other long deals. We have a 5-year extension with Marco. We're not concerned with length of deal. It's a combination of length of deal and where we think a player is in his career. And, you know, those are, I guess, combined, they are effects that do matter to us, and we're conscious of it as we go into these discussions.
Jerry, you mentioned having room for one, maybe two more bats on the roster right now. How do you balance proven veterans that you might bring in with also giving space for young players to grow into?
That's been the trick for us, and the line that we're walking through this offseason, because we do have so many young players that need playing time. And, you know, we've talked about it at some point this year, it will be time for Julio Rodriguez. We want to continue to see every day at bats going to Jared Kelnick and to Cal Raleigh and to Abraham Toro. So balancing that out is why we've coveted versatility so much. And I talked about it with Adam Frazier and how he fits our team in such a positive way. It allows us to either be creative in how we shift positions around or in handedness matchups and giving guys opportunity. So that's a real thing for us. So we are still looking at the potential of adding everyday players rather than, you know, guys who fit roles. But We do have to be conscious of making sure that we give those young players continued runway to develop in the big leagues.
You know, it's interesting. That was another direction I was going to go with you today, is trying to understand the difference. And I had somebody ask me, I forget who it was, whether or not they should be concerned that some of the players being brought in were valued for their versatility, that as if being versatile maybe shows that a player isn't good enough to have one specific spot that they stick at. Can you help explain how that works in your world?
Well, Adam Frazier is a great example, and Abraham Toro is another. But and it's why we were attracted to Abraham, his bat to ball skills and his versatility, and the same with Adam. You know, and Adam obviously has the long track record, but Adam Frazier has been a borderline Gold Glove quality second baseman while being a very good hitter at the major league level with on base skills. So it's a he is capable of playing one position and playing it quite well, but the benefit that he brings a team is the versatility in addition to the quality of the bat and what he can do as a middle infielder. And when you find players that have, and we've talked about it here on your show, the that when you have players that have that selflessness, that will go out there and they'll do what the team needs on a given day to put the best lineup on the field, that's when you really click in. I think you see it with the Dodgers, you know, in recent years. They've got a lot of stars and a lot of stars that move around wherever they're needed. Right? And I think that's the kind of team that we would imagine having.
You know, it's funny. We just got to talk to Robbie Ray, who was great. He was really fun to talk to. He seems like a bright guy and an interesting guy. And he mentioned first of all, he was very complimentary of the pitch that you guys gave him and of you and Justin and Scott, et cetera. But also, you know, mentioned that he knew Mitch Haniger from their time in Arizona and that he reached out to Mitch and got a really strong feeling from Mitch about kind of where this team is going. Obviously, you saw some of that with the Players Tribune article and more of that. But, you know, we've talked a few times now about the possible extension for Haniger. Is that something that you guys are continuing to work towards?
No, we'll get to that. You know, again, as every time you ask me, I don't think that's something that we should discuss publicly. And, you know, but we're always open to the players, especially Mitch, because this is the last year of his time with the Mariners. If we don't get something done, we're always open to having those discussions, and we will. But, you know, to discuss them publicly is probably not, it's not good business, nor is it good for the player or us emotionally. It gets a little bit too dramatic.
Makes sense. Well, it was cool to hear that he's excited, and certainly fans are excited. The Robbie Ray deal is, I think, gotten people pretty pumped about it, excited about Frazier as well. And it sounds like we still have about 12 hours left, Jerry, for you to continue wheeling and dealing. So I'll let you get off the phone with me. I'm sure you got other GMs and other folks to talk to. And it sounds like we may not get to talk for a long time. So if that is the case, goodbye and enjoy what comes next. And we'll look forward to talking as soon as we can.
All right, guys. Hopefully we can get some more done.
Don't be put off by DePoto not saying much about the possibility of an extension with Mitch Haniger. That is something I am pretty sure both sides would like to keep private, if that is a road they're going to go down. But Jake and Stacy, I think they picked up on the significance of Haniger playing a part in the Ray signing. I think they really nail it here.
Here's why it should excite fans, Jake. We know that Mitch Haniger wrote that column for the Players Tribune talking about, hey, watch out, rest of MLB. Basically, the Mariners are coming after you, and not just, you know, to win the division, not just to get a winning record and get to the postseason, to win it all. They're really trying to get this done. And now he's following it up behind the scenes. This wasn't Mitch Haniger coming out and saying, hey, sign here. Hey, listen to what I've done. This is another player, a big name free agent who said, oh, by the way, you want to know one of the recruiting tools? Another reason I came here is, oh, this guy that I used to play with, Mitch Haniger, said it was really special. You've seen Mitch Haniger putting in the work behind the scenes. And there's something about knowing that, like, he really believes in what he's saying that should make fans excited.
Yes. I mean, there's so much to unpack there. But, you know, going off of the Haniger comments, Stacey, I mean, it's huge, because one of the things that also has been talked about and rumored, and quite frankly, when we had Ryan Divish on with us yesterday, Divish didn't even sound like, you know, it was likely that Haniger would sign with the team. I don't know if you convince Robbie Ray to come here for one season. If you know that you're only going to be here for one season, why would you tell somebody that you love the culture here, that you love the fan base, you love the city, you love all the success, If you're planning on skipping town the very next year, and you're not at least intrigued and excited and willing to listen to that conversation, at least at the end of the year, to sign back with the Mariners, if not sign an extension, you know, here, you know, as the season progresses, right? So that to me is something that's very positive, because before this, I know that he came out with that, but to me, or he came out with the Players Tribune article, but to me that was more of a, okay, I'm gonna do a little nudge here with the front office and put them on notice, right? It's not that Jerry DePoto and Scott Service and John Stanton and everybody else didn't needed this nudge from Mitch Haniger, but I do very much believe that it was the player just being speaking very honest in a public way and saying, look, this is going to matter to me in terms of where I see my future with the Mariners and how aggressive they are. And to hear Haniger's passion about what's going on and for that to have a legit impact on Robbie Ray and how he views where the team is currently at enough to want to be a part of it. I mean, that's massive. That is very, very exciting.
Yeah, I think too, like, I think back to a conversation that we were having about the at the time, anonymous players, and we assumed Kyle Seager was one of them. You know, what if Marco, what if Mitch are one of them? The anonymous players that spoke with Ryan Divish about frustrations with the front office, frustrations with Jerry DePoto. This was after the Kendall Graveman trade. So a lot of that might have been tied to the trade itself of Kendall Graveman, but it seemed like there was plenty of lingering frustration in the sentiment that was about Jerry DePoto that extended beyond the trade. And I think that we talked about at the time a fear that the relationship that DePoto may or may not have with older veterans on the team could affect free agency. And I think what you've seen is that there's
right. That's a great point.
Has not. Whether or not we don't know what DePoto's relationship is with Mitch Haniger. I mean, again, I think that it was clear that it was strained between Kyle Seager. But if I'm looking at Mitch Haniger as being another older vet here that, you know, you're certainly worried, like, what if he hasn't had the best experience here in Seattle? What's he going to say? Well, this is, like, evidence number one, case in point number one, as to someone who might have every reason to doubt this team, who instead believes that they can get something done.
Yeah, and that's very, very important. And that is also one of the reasons why when you hear about Robbie Ray talk about the culture, and that's one of the reasons why he was really intrigued and excited about the Mariners. I mean, I'm sorry, what? We're talking about culture? Did he say winning culture? Like
I'll have to check the tape.
Hold on. Can we check that one more time? Because I'm pretty sure Robbie Ray said winning culture.
I think it was just the culture, the winning culture. Seeing the guys last year.
Okay, so he did say winning culture.
He certainly did.
Okay, they won 90 games last year, but they've been in the midst of a rebuild. And how can they have a winning culture? Well, it's because Scott Servais has been laying the foundation and the groundwork throughout the entire process. And when you have a team that is on the rise and that they, you know, make a statement in 2021 and you felt the togetherness of that group, it stands out. And again, it's the reason why I will forever, forever love the 2021 Mariners. Not because it was the underdogs that rose to the top and had an opportunity to make the playoffs, but because this is the team that legitimately laid the foundation for what is to come. And that group and what they were able to do and the mindset and the culture and the togetherness that they had throughout that season just is very evident to other players around Major League Baseball. And it was evident to Robbie Ray that there was something special brewing here in Seattle and that there is something brewing here and that it is something that he wants to be a part of because he knows that winning baseball is right around the corner here for the Mariners, and he's going to be a big factor in all that.
Now, the most important question that was asked of Robbie Ray arguably was not about Mitch Haniger. It was not about what got him here. It wasn't about Seattle's culture. It wasn't about even how it felt to win a Cy Young.
Really?
No. It was on his pants.
Yeah, so, you know, again, I talked about getting into the gym and putting on the weight and getting stronger and getting bigger. And, you know, my pant size didn't change. And so I just kept the same pant size. And in spring training last year, guys were just giving me a hard time about it. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to do it because you guys hate it. And then it became my thing. It became, you know, going into the season, it kind of became a part of me and a part of my game. And, you know, it ended up working out.
Respect. I so respect that this is part of his brand.
Robbie Ray's decision to go with his pant size is similar to Stacey when she does Liza Minnelli voice and how much we hate it. And she's like, "Know what? I'm going to do it anyway."
That's right.
Doing it.
That's right. And
that's
then
who I am now. I'm not changing.
And I just love that it's like he's like, "Look, now it's a signature. Now it's part of my signature, yeah. And I'm riding
it's
with
who
it."
Who I am.
I wonder. Is it something where he feels like he has to be that guy at all times? Where now everything has to be tight, like his jeans.
No, I think it's like a
he's
character.
He's got to have extra tight jeans.
No,
and he's walking around with extra tight shorts.
Well, I hope not.
Or do you think at home when he gets away from everybody,
he's like, let me relax and put on some sweats.
He's got the loosest,
JNCO jeans.
Jeans. You can possibly imagine he's in just
Kirkland
sweats.
Signature cargo jeans.
Don't you dare disrespect Kirkland signature.
Just take
it's
a
Rick
deep breath.
Specialty.
I don't think so.
I would love for that to be the case.
I think this is like a character that he has.
I love it.
Yeah.
Time for a hit from my Talking Mariners podcast with, of course, James Osborne, and just a little bit of excitement with the signing and what it represents.
it's the last time I can remember cheering about a deal in my own home for the Mariners. I don't even know. I was blown away. So tell me more about how this deal came to be the way it is.
Well, the way we talked to Jerry about it, they of course had the introductory press conference today, and this is not something, although I believe that you brought it up earlier in this offseason, that was something that you were hoping that they would get creative in doing opt-outs, in doing maybe front-loaded contracts, in doing things like that. And it's not something that he has really done very much before. And he said, you know what, this is how things are done now. So he's rolling with it. And I think that we're learning that there's been a lot more flexibility with him. They'll go 6 years. I don't think they'll go seven. But that's something I don't think people really believed he'd go 6 years for a long time. I don't think people believe that he would do an opt-out type deal. Well, that needs to happen right now. Probably wouldn't do a no trade. Robbie's got no trade for a couple of years in that one. Wouldn't give up a qualifying offer pick. Well, at the right time, yes, he will. So we're seeing that those doors are a lot more open at the appropriate time. And with Robbie Ray, and there are some things that have come out in this story that I think bode so well for the Mariners. And there are so many times, so funny, it's when free agents used to come to the Mariners, to a man, they would say, I grew up watching Ken Griffey Jr. And I'm like, do they put the script in front of him? I mean, do you have to say that? Probably, I mean, maybe. I mean,
it might be true.
A little bit. I mean, he is everybody, a lot, you know, he is a favor, but every single person who came through would say that. So kind of along those lines. And so now, oh, no, we love the Mariners. We've heard, you know, it's a great young team and all, you know, the things that you want the team to be seen for. But I think there's a lot of focus on the Kevin Mather breakfast meeting. There's a lot of focus on the Kendall Graveman outrage. There's a lot of focus on Kyle Seager's leaving town and things like that. So to me, I think there was a question, is this really going to hurt them? Is this how they are perceived outside of Seattle? We know these details a lot more. If I talk to broadcasters or even some reporters from other cities, those aren't really things that come up with them. It's more on the field. I mean, these are more kind of in-house, in your backyard. Well, that's uncomfortable. That's not good type things. And so that might be a little bit more with the players that way, too. They do talk, but in hearing what happened with Robbie Ray, was he on their board? Yes, he was on their board. Was he at the top of their board? I don't think he was at the top of their board. Had they made an offer to him when they made whatever that offer was last Saturday? No, they had not. Did Jerry DePoto talk with Robbie's representation before that? Yes. But it was the way that he told it is that when he called and expressed interest, he was immediately told, yeah, Robbie is interested in the Mariners.
What do you think that was? So he joined Mike Salk earlier this morning, too. He also spoke at a presser. Getting into some of what you heard and just what you kind of observe, what do you think it was that opened that door for Robbie Ray to consider the Mariners? Because I don't know that every free agent's door was open so far that has signed to the Mariners. We'll talk about Marcus Semien in a bit. Why do you think that door was open for him?
To be honest with you, and these are some of the more good things that come out. First of all, I did ask Jerry, is that a typical reaction that you get when you make a first call on a player? Does an agent say, oh, yeah, you're on the list, or my player? No, agents usually hold back, and that makes sense a little bit more than that. So that is not something you typically hear. If you remember, Robbie Ray was in Seattle pitching against them at the end of August, I believe it was last year. And it was a weekend, and it wasn't the typical Toronto because the borders weren't open, but they did have a 28,000-fan night. They did have a 26,000-fan night. There were good crowds there, and things were starting to go. And he did talk to some players, and he did talk with Mitch Haniger, who was a teammate in Arizona. And from everything I'm hearing, Mitch Haniger has been very active in helping with the recruiting, which – to me, I love that he is helping bring players in, and I love that he is taking ownership of his club. He's got one more year. We've talked about it all offseason. Get him extended. It's a two-way street. Both have got to want it, but I love seeing that commitment from his side in doing those things. I think that's big. And then in talking with Robbie a little bit today, I think it was just more of a no-nonsense. I think this was not everybody is going to get the biggest contract I can get. there were things that were important to him as far as what the organization has to offer in the pitching coach and the analytics and how they handle their pitching. He definitely wanted to be on a team that was ready to go. He talked about looking across the field, and you felt it. You felt that this was a good group of guys and that this was a team that was on the edge of taking that next step. So I think you put a lot of this together and a good offer, a fairly aggressive offer in that it escalated very quickly. This wasn't a long, drawn-out, we'll get back to you. It was, you know, we're pushing this, we're pushing it forward on the table right now. This is what we got. This is what we want to do. And I think that there was an element of the player wanting to, you know, get this done before the uncertainty as well. But when you take a look at all of that, you've got a Cy Young Award winner that's from Tennessee. Well, that wipes out. Nobody's going to want to come to Seattle. That's a long way from Tennessee. He saw enough that he liked in the conversations that he had and the Zooms that he had. He, I think, was sold quite a bit on the organization.
This deal is interesting to me because, I like I said earlier, I was blown away by the terms. I thought for sure that he was going to be the pitching equivalent of the Marcus Semien deal this offseason, and here's what I mean. I was expecting that some team was going to look at him and say, that's a Cy Young, I'm paying him Cy Young money, and just blow the market away, and that's how it was going to go. I don't know what team it was going to be, but I figured that would be how it would be, and the Mariners would be priced out of that. They weren't going to do that. When he came in for basically Kevin Gausman money with an opt-out, so basically making it a three-year deal, which is way shorter than I would have anticipated, it to me said Robbie Ray's interest in coming to the Mariners is that he believes it's better for him and his career to play in Seattle, in T-Mobile Park, with this roster and the direction this program is going. This is a baseball decision more than a business decision for him. And that was a mutually beneficial thing. If he went to Seattle, this would be better for his career to do this three-year option, 5 years if it doesn't work out deal. He's going to succeed more here in his mind, and that's what he wants.
Right, and he could have waited until after and the frenzy and everything else. I would think there would have been a big deal out there for him. We haven't really seen New York get involved yet. There are a lot of teams that need pitching right now. James Paxton, the deal that he got?
Can you believe that? He got more money than he got last year with the Mariners for pitching eight pitches this last. Do you think they're done in the rotation? Is there more left in the rotation?
Oh, no. He's looking for another starter.
So he said coming in, Derek DePoto, and like you said, I agree with you. Ever since they traded Edwin Diaz, he's been very forthright about how he was going to build the team and what he was going to do. That's my read on how Jerry DePoto's been approaching talking about his additions and actually making them. So I agree with you. He said two pitchers. That's what we're looking for. Robbie Ray is one. Some of the big infielder names are off the table. A lot of the outfielders have not signed. Starling Marte is the only one who's signed. Do you think that the money that he's got allocated for additions, do you think that's more on the pitching side still, or do you think it's going to round out the back of the rotation?
No, I think the bat right now is the priority. But I think that what you're going to be looking at probably is somebody established, somebody solid. I don't think you're looking at your number two. Might not be your number five either, though, for that matter. And I think that that player more likely is to come and trade.
Jerry DePoto has done a great job of making deals for players and with teams that we're not talking about and thinking about. You've mentioned that quite a bit in our podcast here. So I would expect that when the Mariners do make their additions to the lineup and the rotation via trade, it won't be for the players that everyone's been talking about. That's my read on it. I think that there's a good chance they make two or three additions, and it will be with the non-usual suspects.
I think there's a good chance on the pitching side in particular, that if they do that, it's going to be a name that's more recognizable. I don't think it's going to be, here's Nate Karns. You know, we were all, who's Nate Karns when all of that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be somebody that's a little bit more established.
That would be exciting for Mariners fans. And I think that's right. It's appropriate. You mentioned earlier in the podcast that Jerry DePoto was proving this year that some of the stuff that we had said, his philosophies are X and his limits are why. Those were conditions of where the Mariners were in their process of building a winner. And they are now at a spot where the rules have changed because their goals are different. Their goals now are to build a playoff team with the controllable roster they have and the payroll flexibility they have. So I think that's a really exciting spot, and I think it opens the door for them to be creative, to, like you said, not put all their eggs in one basket with guys, and to be able to fit whoever's available for the right situation for the Mariners. I think that there are plenty of names out there that will make the Mariners better, and I think we're going to see a couple of trades, at least one that we're going to look at and say, that price was really worth that guy. Mm-hmm. I can't believe they did that. We had that reaction with Robbie Ray's contract. I would expect to see the same thing in a trade. I felt that way about Adam Frazier. I can't believe that that's what it took to get that guy. I mean, Ray Kerr probably was in danger of not being on the Mariners within a year or two, just based on his age and his status with 40-man rosters and everything. I mean, he's not a guy that they needed to find space for. And then, an 18th-round pick from last year's draft was the other prospect that went in that deal. And that netted you an all-star caliber second baseman. What else is out there for the Mariners that we're not seeing right now? I think there's plenty more they could do to really impact their roster through trades.
I think there is, and we're not even talking about what we talked about in the last podcast, and those are, you hit on it a little bit, but some different players, those that are already at the major league level. And is there an interest in Abraham Toro, which the more I hear, the more I think the Mariners really, really, really do like him and hold on to him, but that makes me wonder how much he would be to another team, especially if you get another infielder.
And Jerry Dipoto proved when he traded Edwin Diaz that he's willing to move on from guys he loves. The Mariners loved Edwin Diaz. Mm-hmm. I took them at their word that they believed he was going to be a cornerstone for their bullpen. And yet, they were willing to attach him to Robinson Cano to make a deal that was better for the organization. They bit the bullet.
Look,
on that.
They
made a hard deal.
They can afford to do that. They can afford to part with just about any prospect. They really can. If we can sit here, I wrote this the other day, and think of, five different names we do not want to give up, three different names we do not want to give up. There is all the more reason that you should give up if you actually have the need right there. Don't trade just to trade, but if there is a targeted specific need, you're going to be okay if you give up one of these guys.
It's not a real deal, but you can move anybody. You can move Jared Kelnick if you are able to get somebody like Juan Soto and sign him to a deal. Mm-hmm. You have the ability to absorb that and not have it be this enormous risk.
And there has been interest in Kelnick. I've had other teams ask me about Jared Kelnick.
And it's an interesting thing to watch. I mean, if you're truly serious about next year being competitive and you have the ability to get a young superstar, you have to consider that.
But for now, we're going to let the young superstar grow and see what happens.
Absolutely.
Not saying in any way, shape, or form this is something that should happen, but it is something that other teams are thinking, and it's worth knowing that they are looking, that these are players that are being targeted. And Jerry can do just about anything because of the number of prospects, the number of players that he has. And we're going to have to wrap this up right now. But again, you were pointing out this is where they are in the rebuild. We're doing things differently. We're spending money. We are not worried about qualifying offers. We are not worried about opt-outs in contracts. We're going out there and, we don't have to acquire by trade. We can go out there and spend the dollars. And how fun was it just to see the tender deadline yesterday and not really even have to look at any of those names?
So good. And you didn't have to convince me why it was important to have a certain reliever at the end of the 40-man roster. I'm so thankful for that.
Well, there's a gem right there. He could be the 26th man.
They
can't
let this guy go.
How did that happen? You can do something with that player. Nah, they've taken a step forward. They're in a different program right now. On the podcast, we also hit on what's next. We know Dipoto wants another starter, at least one more infielder, and possibly an outfielder. Are we looking at Bryant, Story, or Chapman? Could we be looking at more than one? The podcast can be found on 710sports.com on the podcast page under The Hot Stove. Time to check in with John Morosi, who absolutely nailed it with his prediction on Marcus Semien's contract. Don't believe me? Here's John 1 week ago.
I saw that Boris is expecting north of $200 million for him. Do you look at that and say, well, that makes sense? Or is that pie in the sky for a guy? I mean, obviously coming off a brilliant season, but
sure.
Is that who he is moving forward? Well, or it seems like it's a bit of a risk. For a guy that age, and you look at his history in the league, hasn't always been, obviously, what he produced last year.
Right. He's a really interesting case because on the field, off the field, tremendous value. He can play an up-the-middle position, so he can be a shortstop. He proved he could play second base, which is obviously where the Mariners would want him. I look at him as being somewhat similar to George Springer. Springer, up-the-middle player, center field, goes to the Blue Jays, and his contract, about the same age that Marcus is right now, was 6 for $150. And so that means it's exactly at that $25 million a year range. I think that's what Marcus is probably going to try to hit. And then the question becomes, can you go 25 times 7? That would get you to 175, which is obviously way more than the one-year deal he took to go to Toronto. So, I mean, I think that's – if he gets – I would have a hard time if I was Marcus Semien, if somebody offered me 7 years for 175 – I would have a hard time saying that's way too low. I think ultimately, if you're at 7 and 175 for Semien, I believe you're going to be part of the final conversation. If he gets 8, I would be a little surprised, not totally flabbergasted, but I do think if you're at 7 years with him for a middle-of-the-infield player, you almost never see middle-of-the-diamond infielders giving you good value at the age of 37, 38. This is like Derek Jeter-type later-career Jeter years.
Yeah.
I think that for Semien, if you go 7 for 175, if you're comfortable at that level, I think you're going to be – if you don't get the player, you're going to be at least one of the finalists if you're at that level.
Nailed it. So what did John have to say this week?
And here he is by the magic of modern technology, joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He is the one, the only, John Morosi. How are you, man?
Bob and Mike, I am doing great. I am here in Arlington, Texas, Globe Life Field, home of the Texas Rangers. Unfortunately, mentioned earlier, we are in an MLB lockout, but I can assure you that the sporting competitions continue here in Arlington. We've got a huge high school football playoff game happening on the field where the World Series was played a year ago, so that they're setting up right now. I love it. Baseball, football, all together here in Texas.
Yeah, I was noticing you were standing on a field that was marked with football, you know, with the yardage and everything. I'm going, wait, where the heck is he? But that explains it. So you are in the...
I will tell you one quick thing.
Yeah.
Tune in tomorrow morning to Hot Stove on MLB Network Radio because I think we will be seeing actual footage of me running the 40-yard dash.
Ooh.
On that field.
Wow.
Now, back in the day when I was a no-threat quarterback, I thought I could run it in about 5 flat. I will say that time has not been kind to my wheels, and I did not run it in 5 flat today. In fact, I think we had the network, my colleague Matt Cinciamino at MLB Network was recording and stopped watching it. Jenna, my outstanding producer, was here. She did all everything here. And so basically, we have great video of it. I wish that I would have just had a better performance.
Could you beat Rich Eisen?
I was about to ask that. Yeah.
Well, pardon me?
Do you think
could
you could beat?
Could I beat
Rich Eisen, who runs in a suit? And
oh, you know, so I had my, I tell you this, extenuating circumstance, I was not wearing tennis shoes, and I was still wearing a shirt and tie, no sport coat, but I was not properly warmed up. I think had I been on my game, that at least would have started with a 5 and not a 6, which I'm afraid is what happened.
All right. Well, we'll tune into that. Let's get to the to the business at hand, which is the lockout, and it's not obviously not a surprise to anybody. Nobody's caught off guard by this. What I thought was interesting is the conversation surrounding it. Hearing Manfred, hearing Tony Clark, and others. You know, boy, I feel like baseball is really getting in their own way here because there's so much excitement during this time. The signings, the Hot Stove League, and this really, really impacts their ability to be sort of like the NFL, where the NFL is a topic of conversation almost 365 24/7. And baseball, I know, would love to get into that, you know, that territory. I don't know that they can, but this is such a great time, and there's so much drama, and there's so much intrigue, and conversation around these signings and the momentum and what's this team going to do, and can you believe this guy got this contract, and how come this guy isn't signed, and now it stops dead in the water, and you can't help but feel like, man, I know they got to find labor peace, I understand what happened in 94, but the timing of this is really, really poor.
You're right, it is, and obviously I think you look at the big picture here, and there is so much momentum, or at least there was until a couple days ago, with all these signings. The sport has never had a work stoppage when money has been spent like this over the period of a month, because money has never been spent like this over the period of a month, ever, in the history of the game. This is truly a unique time in baseball history. And I think what we heard today in Tony Clark's interview with Jeff Passan and also what the commissioner said here at the ballpark, they're talking about some of the same issues, but they're doing it in different ways. MLB has said that they would be comfortable with there being an age-based free agency as opposed to service time years-based free agency, whereas the union wants to actually keep the service time-based free agency, but then reduce the amount of time required to become a free agent. So, for example, reportedly their proposal would be 5 years of service time if you are a young enough player, if you are 29 and a half years of age or younger. So it's on some level some similar paradigms, but the overall output is dramatically different. And I think it's important to have that understanding on either side of where the possible compromise points are. I believe they exist. I really do. I just think, and I also think that a lot of the proposals that MLB has put out there would really stimulate spending, whether it's a draft lottery, whether it's the elimination of the compensatory draft picks, the salary floor for certain teams. I believe comprehensively MLB has put forth a lot of measures that if used in concert with each other would have the desired effect of spending more money on free agents down the line.
John, you were down there on the front lines when these final talks were happening. What led to a final seven-minute meeting? Was one side not acting in good faith, or did both sides go in knowing it was just going to be a very abrupt, hey, see ya, all right, we're going to have a lockout?
Well, it's an important question, Mike, because basically what had happened yesterday was MLB came in with a set of proposal, sort of a two-step proposal, where there was a raising of the competitive balance tax threshold, the luxury tax threshold, if you will, that was put on the table, as long as there was also a corresponding adjustment to the way the salary arbitration works in terms of how salary arbitration salaries are determined, the pay scale for players who have not yet hit free agency, simply put, the 0 to 3 years of service players and then the 3 to 6. And basically that was presented. And then as soon as there was a bit of a recess, it was then that 7-minute meeting that basically the players came back and said, we can't work with this. There's no counter. And that was the end of the talks. So it was a relatively abrupt follow-up meeting that basically just confirmed everybody's worst fears, which was that these two sides were not close.
So was this necessary? Could they have continued conversations and meetings and not locked the players out and continued with the hot stove and kept that momentum going? Or is it just, hey, we weren't going to be able to make the progress we want, that it needed to be done? I mean, I guess it feels like if you're going to shut everything down the way they are and you know, no conversations can be had with players and teams and all of that, does that help focus them? I guess I'm trying to figure out, was this truly necessary in order to get where they need to go?
You know, it's a great question, and I think it's really important to frame it that way, because you're right. There was no stipulation that there had to be an automatic lockout. The commissioner has said that when you get to this stage without a new CBA and without any more momentum toward one, that in his mind, he's describing it as a defensive lockout, one that would protect the season by locking the players out and creating financial leverage now. That is the reason why this was initiated, was to give the parties sufficient runway to work on this and make a deal. What will materially change between now and January or February or March? Let's hope it's not March, but if it is, it's just urgency to make a deal based on the calendar. What I will tell you is that if the sides come to an agreement at all in the next 2 months, it will be a fast departure from the way that past work stoppages have been concluded. In fact, only once in baseball history was there even a resolution in the month of February. More often it's been in either March or April, and there has never been, never. This is the ninth work stoppage. There has never been a work stoppage in baseball history that ended in either December or January. It's never happened before. So that is relatively instructive to tell us that if precedent is worth anything, this could be measured in months and not weeks.
So when it gets down to it, when you run out of runway and you're looking at the potential of missing maybe even regular season games or certainly a little bit of a limited spring training, which side starts to feel more pressure? Is it the players, they feel the need to kind of cave in, or are the owners sitting at the possibility of losing regular season gates, are they going to feel the need to give in a little bit more to the players' needs?
Well, and there's pressure on both sides, Mike. I think the one reality of professional sports is that it's the players who have the finite amount of time in which to earn their money. And this is a group of people who already had to give up half of their wages from 2020. And certainly the owners as well did not make their money during the pandemic shortened season. But we understand in pro sports that a lot of the value that you have in terms of the franchise value itself is less based on your cash flow and more based on your equity and what the value of the brand is and the stadium if you own it and the media rights and all of those different things. And those tend to be much more enduring than what we all understand is the relatively fleeting career of most professional athletes not named Tom Brady. So this is something that I think we have to understand and have an appreciation for. It's a very unique set of circumstances here. I do think both sides would feel pressure. I think just based on life and the life of a player and how long they have to earn their money, there might be a bit more pressure on the player side. But I think what Bob said at the outset is also true. I mean, the owners have to also understand this very unique time in American life where our society is changing so much and so rapidly that any time that you take yourself out of circulation for a period of time, you worry that the next thing comes along, grabs the attention of young people, and then you're lost. And I think that is something that that everybody in this sport has to be sensitive to. Baseball remains very popular, I have to say, on the youth level, looking at youth participation. It's been very resilient in recent years, which I think is counter to what a lot of the narrative is about it. But we have to get to a spot where Major League Baseball and discussing Jared Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez and Robbie Ray becomes a national topic, not just a local one for devoted Mariner fans. And I think baseball being locked out certainly does not help anybody's cause because the Mariners would love to be able to talk about Robbie Ray, but now they can't. Their website can't have any stories about Robbie Ray.
Yeah, we saw it. They took down the pictures. It's kind of wild
right
to see.
So and by the way, it's important to point out that is not to spite the players. That is not to make them look foolish. That is a matter of national labor law. In fact, so in a lockout scenario, you cannot use the image or likeness video of, if you'll notice, there's no video of current players on MLB.com right now. Mm-hmm. It's any video is of Hall of Famers, Jim Thome, those who have retired a long time ago. And that's all part of the rules of a lockout, which, by the way, back in 94, 95 in strike, we didn't have MLB.com. We didn't have MLB Network. So it's a very different set of circumstances that are all being experienced in a very unique way.
Our weekly conversation with our MLB and NHL insider John Morosi is presented by Stanford's Restaurant. And, well, let's talk about what the Mariners did. I love the Robbie Ray signing. I don't know how you couldn't like it. The AL Cy Young Award winner. They bring in Adam Frazier, who I like. He's signed to the end of the year. We'll see what happens after that. They signed Andrés Muñoz to an extension. I was getting greedy, John. I was saying, you know, if they can get Chris Bryant, Marcus Stroman, and bring back Tyler Anderson, I'm giving them an A. Now, Stroman has now moved on to the Cubs. Chris Bryant is still out there. We'll see what happens with Tyler Anderson. But what do you think, what's the likelihood that they could land another guy like a Chris Bryant, a Trevor Story, who they've been attached to? And what do you think of what they did to this point with those three players that I just mentioned?
Well, I think that, first of all, the interest in Bryant, from what I've been told, is real. It's legitimate. I think Trevor Story also would fit exceptionally well. I think Jerry DePoto has been very upfront in talking about the role that they see J.P. Crawford having on this team and working around that. I think it's probably a long shot. Long shot, I'll emphasize that. But Carlos Correa playing shortstop, or playing third base, rather, might be one distant possibility. I would say it's very, very low likelihood of happening, but it's part of the universe of options for them. And I think you give a good name in Tyler Anderson, someone who's a swing guy, whether it's Anderson, whether it's Carlos Rodon,
we're not so sure what the free agent market will look like whenever the transaction freeze is over. It is really anybody's guess. I would say one thing to keep in mind, too, Matthew Boyd, of course, is from the Seattle area, now a free agent after being non-tendered by the Tigers this week. He is someone that I would keep an eye on if I'm a Mariner fan to potentially look at down the line. But I think that those are all good free agent names to watch. The moves they already made, Ray, outstanding. I think he allows Gonzalez and Flexen to slot into a better spot. I think Gilbert and Dunn, same thing. It just takes the pressure off the group to add in one more veteran player. I think it was a very wise extension there for Munoz. I like what he brings to the bullpen. I think he's got a chance to be a very good reliever for a very, very long time now. And then Frazier is someone who gives a good amount of balance to this lineup. I think you look at the right side, and Haniger and France are going to probably bat 3-4 in some way, shape, or form. It gives you some insurance. He could be a DH depending on what Kyle Lewis ends up doing in terms of how he comes back. You've got Julio Rodriguez, but when you're in a situation with Frazier, he can bounce around. He can play where you need him to play, and I think on some level that alleviates that need. We had talked before about Semien, and certainly I think Semien would have been an amazing player for the Mariners. It allows you to maybe have Frazier play second with Toro at third, and then pursue someone who, like Bryant, who honestly is he can play center field better than people expect. And I think the having a center fielder, maybe even a when you think about an option like a Michael Conforto, for example, of course, he's got some roots from having played for Oregon State there in the Northwest. I think a number of bats exist that would help the Mariners get some consistency in center field, which is probably the one key need they still have left among their position players.
John, do you think we'll see the frenzy when this finally ends that we saw these past couple days of guys signing and needing to get into camps quickly?
I think so. I think it probably depends partially on when the work stoppage is over. If it ends on February 1, it might be a busy couple weeks. If it ends on February 27th, it's going to be a flurry. And so I think we have to be ready for really anything here. It's a very unpredictable time. We have never gone through this before, as at least people of my generation, so to speak. I was in middle school when there was last a work stoppage. So it's a very different experience for all of us, and certainly every single player has never been part of a work stoppage before. So it's a first-of-its-generation type of a moment. And I do think, Mike, the longer this goes, the greater the frenzy is going to be. And one thing to watch, too, is NPB, Japanese Professional Baseball, they are not locked out. And so the mid-tier player who might have been on the fence, do I stay here in the States, do I go to Japan, you may see more of those mid-tier free agents signing to play in NPB because they know that that league will operate on schedule here in 2022.
Last one before we let you go, John. You brought up Carlos Correa and the idea of him playing at third. It's interesting to see that he seems to have softened his stance that I'm a shortstop and I'm going to stay at shortstop. You know, reports are that he'd be willing, I guess, if it's the right situation and, more importantly, the right amount of money. But I was also watching you today and watching MLB Network, and I'm not sure if it was Heyman, somebody talking about they feel like potentially he's running out of options in terms of teams that are going to be willing to spend the kind of money he was expecting to make. And they kind of ran down the list of teams that, you know, already have brought in big-name players or just don't have the need. Do you agree? Do you think he's overestimated his market? Maybe he gets a little bit less than he otherwise would have, and he ends up playing third somewhere? What do you see Correa landing?
It's a very interesting question, and I do think on some level that things have not played out exactly the way that Carlos expected. We also can't forget about perhaps the most obvious solution of all, which is the Astros pay him and he comes back. I think that remains an option that might even be his best option. You know, the whole situation with the Yankees, does he go back to the team when you consider how 2017 played out? I'm not so sure about that. I think there are a number of teams, the Phillies perhaps, one team to keep an eye on. The Marlins, the whole situation with Jeter and what he said about Derek, I don't know how Derek's going to react to that. So there's been a number of just small things that have made you say, maybe not this place, maybe not this place, and it's sort of resulted in us crossing a lot of names off the list. I think the Tigers not being comfortable going to that huge extent to get Correa, I think really was a surprise and maybe hurt him a little bit. Of course, they go out and get Baez. So I do think that of all the options for Correa right now, the most likely one is probably going back to Houston. As much as that would not be the most intriguing and captivating idea, if I'm advising Carlos right now, I think that might be the best option he's got left.
John, always fun to talk to you, man. Thanks so much for the time, and we'll do it again next week.
Sounds great. I think next week, guys, it's going to be all cracking. I mean, what a great game it was last night. I know it didn't end well for Seattle back in my hometown there, but an exciting game. The first ever Kraken shootout we're never going to forget. It was in the great city of Detroit. How about that?
Absolutely. Right. We will hit it hard next week, John. Thanks so much.
Sounds great, guys. All the best. Thank you.
There you go. There's John Morosi with us every single week, again brought to you by Stanford's Restaurant. Let's take two.
Thursday morning, we hear a little bit more about Robbie Ray with Mike Salk intrigued by the tight pants mentality.
I'm distracting myself and trying maybe to avoid again talking about the lockout because I'm so mad about what's going on in baseball. So rather than do that, let me spend a minute or two on what the Mariners did yesterday and our conversation with Robbie Ray, who I really liked. I thought he was great. I thought he seemed like he had a lot of personality, kind of a bulldog type, which is cool. But I think that in a ridiculous story about his pants, we learned a little bit about who Robbie Ray, the pitcher, is, and I think that's actually kind of a cool thing. So I'll play the sound. Maybe you know this, maybe not. Robbie Ray, who the Mariners signed, who's a Cy Young Award winner coming off a Cy Young Award season, wears these, like, super tight pants. I was talking to somebody.
Mediums.
Barely. I was like, oh, yeah, what's up with Robbie's pants? I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It looks like he's wearing yoga pants out there to play baseball in. It's crazy how tight his pants are. I was saying that I wrote a little bit about this yesterday. I was writing that he looks as if his pants belong under another article of clothing.
they're long johns.
Right. Like, you should have those pants and then put something else on over them when it's cold or something like that. Yeah. So he wears these super tight pants. But when I asked him why, the story's kind of interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, again, I talked about getting into the gym and putting on the weight and getting stronger and getting bigger. And, you know, my pant size didn't change. And so I just kept the same pant size. And in spring training last year, guys were just giving me a hard time about it. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to do it because you guys hate it. And then it became my thing. It became, you know, going into the season, it kind of became a part of me and a part of my game. And, you know, it ended up working out.
All right, we'll set aside the fact that his pants became a part of him because that's kind of weird. It's kind of an odd thing to say. But two things, I don't know if they stand out to you, but two things stand out to me. One, why he's wearing them is because his butt got too big, essentially, because he was in the gym so much. Dude, that's awesome. Right. Like, he talked about how he had this big moment of trying to stabilize his core and get himself bigger and stronger. And it's allowed him to repeat his delivery better all the time. And that's why he was better and more consistent last year than he had been in the past. Well, there's evidence of it, not just that he pitched well, but that his pants literally were too small for him because he had gained so much good weight.
You're getting excited about Robbie Ray's glutes. You're sounding dangerously close to Brock Huard.
Damn right. Like, that's my jam right there. We're going to have a whole body show.
It's also one of those things that we're going to know the moment he stops working out the gym.
Like, dude, we know you weren't there working out. Look at your pants. They fit you the way they're supposed to.
Yeah, we saw Felix come in looking different a couple times. He wasn't wearing...
A couple.
He wasn't wearing the smuggling pants.
He just kept getting bigger and bigger pants. Deal with a bigger and bigger body. So that's the first part of it. Obviously, that's good news. But the second thing is, don't you love the way his attitude is like, oh, you don't like it? I'm going to wear them. Like, that's a little bit of the bulldogged toughness.
That's alpha.
Right? That you kind of want from your guy who's going to be leading this pitching staff now. I love that. And yeah, I'm sure it's just guys giving each other grief on a baseball team, which is the way it's supposed to be. But I love the, oh, you think my pants are stupid? I'm not. Like, when people made fun of my pants years ago, this is a true story that happened on this show. Somehow, I don't know, somebody bought me, must have been, I don't know. Somehow I ended up with a pair of fancy, awful jeans that were out? Not Van Dutch, but
True Religions.
True Religion. I somehow ended up with a pair of True Religion jeans.
Oh,
and if you know me.
No.
I didn't even know they made those for men.
Are you hanging out with John Gosselin too?
They made them for men.
I didn't realize.
Do you have a Von Dutch hat?
Yeah, they were like super cheeseball, like going to the club in Scottsdale.
Ed Hardy shirt.
Yes, exactly. They matched like an Ed Hardy shirt.
No.
Oh, yeah. It was terrible. And so I wore these to work here once or twice. And Brock and Colin Paisley, who at the time was our producer, were just killing me for it. And for good reason. I mean, it looked ridiculous.
Yeah.
They were killing me. But of course, did I do what Robbie Ray did? No, I'm not an alpha like that. I'm not a like, oh, fine, you don't like these? I'm going to wear these every day just to shove it on you. Like, I didn't do that.
You let it get to you.
We went outside and burned them. Literally, we filmed us burning these jeans in effigy because they were
religious.
Yes, because they were so horrible. So, like, Robbie Ray doesn't do that. He doesn't shrink from being made fun of by all of his buddies for looking silly. He says, no, I'm going to own it. And then he goes one step farther and says, this is going to intimidate the opponent.
I don't know. I think it's a little bit of an intimidation factor. You see a guy come out onto the field and his jersey is a little snug and, you know, he's got, you know, he's a little bit bigger guy. And I don't know. Maybe there's a little bit of an intimidation factor.
I don't know if he's being serious or not, but I love it. Like, I'm all in. I think it's great. I'm psyched for Robbie Ray. And by the way, compare that to the pitcher he's replacing in your rotation. Bulldog Yusei Kikuchi,
Noted
who if he
bulldog.
Didn't strike out the first batter of the game, went into a shell. Oh, I guess I don't have it. Better start throwing softballs nowhere near the zone. Oh, you're going to skip me in the rotation? Yeah, that's fine. I'm good. I'm fine over here. Compare those two. A, you're getting a Cy Young Award winner instead of a guy that just went in the tank the entire second half of last year. But B, you're getting a personality of bulldogged determination versus, yeah, I'm fine, whatever you guys want to do. You want to skip me? That's cool. I'll hang out in the bullpen. Yeah, I'm all in on the Robbie Haniger deal. Robbie Haniger. Sorry, I got Haniger on my mind because they're buddies. But the Robbie Ray deal, I think
You can't do that unless you're a Cy Young winner either.
Or can you? Do we have a little chicken and egg here? Which comes first, the Cy Young or the pants? Moving on to more serious business. Good to see the Salk Show get Maury Brown, otherwise known as Bizball Maury, a good follow on Twitter. Maury writes quite a bit on the business side of baseball on Forbes, and on Thursday morning, Salk looked to get his expertise on the labor situation.
Well, it finally happened last night after decades of labor peace. The major league owners opted to, lock out their players. That was a quick transition. And so with that in mind, I wanted to talk to a guy who I've known for a long time on the internet. I don't think we've ever actually spoken in person. Maury Brown, who joins me now from Forbes. I got special intro music for you, Maury.
I've both Deep Purple Burn and AC/DC. And those kind of go well together, given where we're currently at. Burn and Are You Ready?
Yeah, so well, throw in a little This Love, too. I got some King's X there for you. I don't know if you heard.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always good stuff.
I like mostly talking music with Maury on the internet because he's a rock fan and he plays in a band. He has cool stuff with guitars and stuff. But unfortunately, we don't just get to sit here and talk about 80s music and all that. And we got to talk about this lockout. You don't seem nearly as distraught about it. Can you tell me why this is happening?
Yeah, I mean, if you really want to distill it down, there's some obvious things that have happened. In terms of the last two labor deals, they went decidedly toward the owners and really became more of a pseudo cap that we see. Conversely, that should have largely provided incentive for some of these clubs to be competitive, and it hasn't happened. Tanking is truly kind of a thing based upon how the draft system operates, which rewards, of course, the worst record with the best or first selections in the draft. And I think that when you pull all those things together, what's largely happened is owners have earned more money. The players have for three consecutive years earned less. And there's some fundamental things about competitiveness in the game that the players see as a problem. Yes, it's absolutely tied to their salaries and whatnot. But teams that have historically hung around the bottom of the standings and lived off of revenue sharing welfare and not tried to be competitive should be a concern for fans. And I think that that's part of the calculus that goes along with where the players sit.
So I agree with everything you just said. Why aren't they talking about those things? Why are they locking out? I mean, like, those are all really big picture, complicated issues that need to be worked out. But they're not talking about any of them. They met for 7 minutes. One said to the other, go to hell. And that's been the end of the conversation.
Yeah, because how you get there is largely different, right? So Rob Manfred held a press conference, and one of the proposals that came out was the players said that they wanted to alter the amount of money in revenue sharing. And the idea behind that was, hey, look, centralized money, stuff from national broadcast deals and streaming and gaming and all that other stuff that goes along with it is much larger than it used to be. And giving these clubs cover to just hang out and earn profit checks without really trying should be addressed with that. Well, that's taboo. You're going after a core thing. Well, what, you know, on the flip side, the owners proposed a deal that would completely scrap salary arbitration. And for those that don't know, Marvin Miller, who was largely seen as the founder of the Players Union and just went into the Hall of Fame, saw salary arbitration as more important than gaining free agency. So you're talking about two like core pieces on management and labor side that they wanted to go after. And so, of course, there's this wide chasm of how they're going to get there. The players are trying to claw back from two labor deals that largely went in favor of the owners. And the owners, of course, want the status quo. And so how do you meet in the middle? Well, they couldn't get it done by December. Some of this is the pandemic. They're trying to do it via Zoom. You know, part of it is largely that the players have made a bold statement in saying, the third one is not going to go as a slam dunk for the owners. Those days are over. And they brought a guy named Bruce Meyer over from the NHLPA to try and make sure that that happens. Whether they claw back entirely from where they were is unrealistic. I don't see it. I mean, it took a couple labor deals for owners to get such a leg up. It's going to take more than one bite of the elephant to, you know, get back to where they want to be.
Well, that's all fine. Again, talking to Maury Brown here from Forbes, and he joins me on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He's got a good sense of why this is happening, and I guess maybe the question is, where does it go and how does it end? Do you believe it does end before spring training, which means basically by February 1st?
Yeah, I mean, that's where everybody's, you know, wants to see it. I mean, I mentioned some revenue streams that matter now that are different than before. First of all, let's all be, you know, aware that baseball games were played in empty ballparks for all of except for the very end of 2020 with the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And that was a considerable hit, right? And it affected, of course, the beginning of the season when ballparks weren't wide open. So you have that. Now, you know, the gaming industry is a huge part of all sports. So if you lose games, that revenue stream goes away. Then you have to rebate your regional sports networks and your national broadcast partners for games that are lost, which they're already having to do due to games that were lost in 2020 due to the shortened season. I think there's an awful lot of pressure on the owners to make a deal happen before games are lost. Players just saw almost $2 billion in commitments leading right up to the lockout happen. And that was a sign that people wanted to get some certainty, the clubs and the players, ahead of this lockout. And that takes some of the teeth away for owners to really kind of strong arm the players. But I honestly believe nobody wants to miss a paycheck. I mean, I just can't imagine it. There are some people that were involved in 94-95 that believe that this will absolutely affect games. I had one guy say, I would be surprised if the season doesn't start in May, but almost everybody to a fault says that we're not going to see spring training games affected when we start to lose revenues. And you know, eventually, if it gets to the regular season, players start losing paychecks.
I got to be honest, in the NFL lockout a few years ago, I guess it's almost a decade now, mm-hmm. but in that lockout, it was really easy for me to choose an enemy. It was the owners. I mean, for me, the players and the Players Association and the NFL has never been as strong or united as in baseball. And they basically went to the owner, as far as I saw it, and said, hey, owner said we're not making enough money. The player said, okay, cool, show us your books. The owner said, no, trust us. And the player said, no, we're not going to trust you until you show us your books. And to me, that's a very clear enemy in that it was the owners. I read through both the statements from both sides here, and I can't come up with a decision on whether I support one side or the other. Because they both seem right, they both seem wrong, and I'm just mad at both of them, not because billionaires are fighting millionaires, but because they're not talking about the things that are that you're mentioning there, that are actual complicated issues with legitimate points on both sides that would make the game of baseball better, and instead they're walking away from each other for the next few months.
Yeah, I don't think it's fair to say they weren't talking about it. I absolutely believe they were all talking about these things. I mean, look, that's what happens in these negotiations. You talk about it, whether you agree to it or whether there's movement enough to get a deal done, right? I mean, there's a ton of stuff that all has to be agreed upon. And so getting that consensus or having that sense of compromise is in there. Now, compromise is something that should not come into play depending on your constituents, right? You got to make a deal that is best for your constituents, right? And that comes around to the money side of it. But I do get to this thing that has happened. And if you're sitting there, right, and this is a labor management thing, right? For those that aren't in unions, they're not going to get it. But owners have continued to make more and more money. And the chasm between the amount of money that has gone to the players and the amount of money that has gone to the owners continues to widen. Okay, fine. You go, I'll accept this. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care whether the owners are making a big profit as long as my team is trying. There are very few Seattle Mariners situations that you can agree with. That's the only one I can agree with. If you've been that bad for that long, well, you better try something new. But the Chicago Cubs should not be blowing it up. You shouldn't see clubs in major markets with large revenue streams blowing it up so that they can go ahead and become competitive. It reminds me of a roller coaster for the fans. You go up and down, and at the end of the day, you get off the ride, and you feel jerked around and nauseous. And so I have to sit in this one and go, you got to think about where the players are at. They're making some very valid points. If the owners are making this much money and everybody is making money, why are some teams not trying? Pittsburgh should have a competitive
I'm sorry, I got to jump in. I totally disagree with you on this one, Maury. I love the point, but I totally disagree. Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Oakland, Tampa, fine. These teams that are stealing money, essentially, and what do they call it? Competitive welfare. Great. I totally agree. That should change, and I think it's despicable what they've done, and it's not good for the competitive balance of the game. But when the Chicago Cubs blow it up in order to rebuild, that's always been part of the game of baseball. I don't think just spending all their money in free agency is the wise thing for them to do. It's not the best way to sustain wins. The best way is to you know, you go for it when you've got it, and you blow up some of your farm system in order to use those assets to get better. And then you have to restock, and sometimes that means trading away the assets you have at the major league level to bring in new ones from the minor league level. It's not about not trying to win and tanking. It's about the natural ebb and flow of that's the way it should be. Some years you're good, some years you're not.
Okay, yeah, and that I don't think it's a black and white issue in terms of some teams doing that and others not. Okay, if you have resources, that means that you can outspend in places that others can't. That means you should be really good at procuring your drafts. You should be really good at developing your talent because you can pay more than somebody in a small market. That also means that you have more resources to go out in free agency. I don't believe that a team like the Cubs needs to be as drastic and dramatic about it. We just saw the Washington Nationals win the World Series in 2019 and went on a full-blown fire sale.
Yeah,
I don't understand that.
Yeah, I get that. No, I'm with you. That part I understand. I think you probably make some good points. Are you still there? We lose you, Maury? You okay?
I am.
Okay,
no, I thought we lost you. Break your pause.
You're just being polite. I appreciate that. It's very rare that we have polite guests on this show. So, hey, look, I could talk about this for the rest of the day. Unfortunately, we got to run here, but I appreciate you coming on. We've never actually talked in person or on the phone. We've only sort of communicated via the internet. And since you're a music guy from Portland, I imagined that you were going to sound like Fred Armisen. So, like, your voice being sort of deep and measured and kind of radio quality was not what I was expecting today.
Well, like I said, I got a face only radio could love.
We appreciate it. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for helping. And we'll talk soon. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Let's do it again, Mike.
All right, there you go. There you go. There's Maury Brown. Again, smart dude. Forbes magazine. Writes about the business of sports and specifically about baseball. He's been around this game for a while. And I disagree with some of that, but yeah, I'm going to run through some of these proposals and things that you're hearing. Cause you got kind of
bullet point those. Yeah.
Yeah. I see if I can bullet point. This comes from Rob Manfred's letter yesterday. I know a lot of people were mad and kind of
cliff notes it or whatever.
Let me see if I can find the spot here. We offered to establish a minimum payroll for all clubs to meet for the first time in baseball history. So essentially they're offering to establish a floor. I love that idea. They should do that. They should absolutely have a floor. And the fact that the players are rejecting that out of hand because they are afraid it's going to lead to a cap, a floor is a good idea. I don't know that I agree with a cap, but I have no issues with the floor. They should have an $100 million floor. That's what they've offered. Okay. Can you imagine if you had $100 million you had to spend?
Get a lot more competitive.
Absolutely. Don't you think? The Reds and the Rockies and the A's. Like, yeah, you got to spend $100 million
Pirates.
Minimum. At least be competitive. Yeah, I think that's actually a good idea. Let's see.
But they're worried that leads to a cap. Okay.
So they want to allow the majority of players to reach free agency earlier through an age-based system that would eliminate any claims of service time manipulation. So currently in baseball, you get to be a free agent after 6 years of service time, right? You get 3 years at major league minimum and then 3 years at arbitration. There's a Super 2, and there's some other ways in which teams manipulate that service time in order to keep guys for longer. And what baseball is saying is, okay, let's just do it by age. When you hit this age, you can become a free agent in that season. So no more of the service time manipulation. They'll get you up sooner, right? Because they want more time with you. So if you're good at 21, they've got you for 9 years. I think right. There's some, or whatever the
29
date
and
is,
a
right?
half, I think is when they say.
Okay, so we got you for 8 years. But if you come up at 24, then we got you for 4.5. I think there's some value to that. I don't know that that's necessarily the way it should end, but I think that's an interesting proposal, right? They're talking about increasing compensation for young players. That makes sense. The way baseball is built right now, young players are overvalued, right? Because they are overvalued in terms of how much you want them and undervalued in terms of how much they get paid. And then older players, it's the opposite. Marcus Semien, we just found he's going to make like $23 million or $25 million when he's 37, 38 years old, when he's not going to be worth even close to that. It's a screwy system. I totally agree. Get in a room and talk about it. Get in a room and talk about it.
They did for 7 minutes.
For 7 minutes. And I know they've been talking before that. But in 7 minutes, you decide, there's nothing worth talking about here. Are you going to schedule another negotiation session? No, we're good. Now, we'll just talk about this in January when we have a couple days to go before spring training and hold everything in the balance because everybody wants the moment or they want the leverage. It's such garbage. I mean, I understand it from a negotiating standpoint. I understand why they're doing it. But does anyone give a lick about fans and the entire process? No, they don't care. They do care about trying to make the game more interesting, better to watch, and more competitive. But they're doing that because of revenues, obviously. That's the driving factor. And that's fine. But you don't need to... Aren't there people that love the game that want to just sit and talk about this stuff rather than trying to leverage each other? It's such a bummer to me, and I hate that this whole thing is happening. It's 8:15, time for Need to Know.
For more on the labor situation, Jake and Stacy turn to Larry Stone.
I guess I'll start with kind of the bigger picture. Do you see any one side giving in anytime soon, or do you think there is a chance this carries into the regular season?
Well, I think there's a chance. This is very reminiscent. I mean, I go back. I covered the '94 strike and even back farther to the 1990 lockout, and it's very reminiscent. The rancor between the two sides is very reminds me a lot of the way it used to be back then when the union and the management just were constantly at odds, and that's a bad sign. I mean, the statements that were put out right from the start last night from Tony Clark and Rob Manfred were very antagonistic, and to me that doesn't bode well. But there is a lot of time still, a couple of months before really the deadline is really, you know, March for if you want to get the season started without losing any games. You need about a 3-week spring training, which is what they had in 1990, which was the last lockout. So there's a lot of time, but I don't see either side moving very easily, which is what the problem is. So there's going to have to be some sort of compromise, but right now I don't see the path very easily towards getting there.
Well, Larry, and that's the other thing that kind of bothers me about this issue is that you see this, and sometimes this happens, and it's not unusual in business, but it just seems like when you're taking on something like a sport and something that cultivates a sport and fandom and all this kind of stuff, that there be a little bit more urgency from either side to try and get something done. But, okay, you go into this lockout with Major League Baseball. But, Larry, do you anticipate that this is going to speed up the negotiating process and that they won't get close to the final deadline or like the players' union would have probably done with a threatening of a potential strike regardless?
I think it will go down to the wire because that's the way negotiations go. You need that final deadline, and in this case, it's not December 1st because there's no games to be lost. I just think it's going to go right down to the last moment when you could still get the players together for spring training and probably a shortened spring training and start on time and start the year on time. So this is a preemptive strike, not using the word strike unintentionally by Major League Baseball to prevent a strike by the players, which is where they made the mistake in 94 when they tried to negotiate through the off season and they didn't. And once the season started, the players suddenly had the upper hand and they took it right into August. And when they knew it was going to hurt the teams the most with the postseason looming, and then they went on strike. And so in all sports, that sort of set the framework for negotiations. I mean, there's been lockouts in hockey, basketball, NFL in the off season as well. You know, owners in all the sports learned from what happened in 94. So that's why they're doing it now. And it does, the one benefit is it is possible to not lose games. I think fans will quickly forget. They almost always do. They say they won't, but they do. And once the games get started again, if opening day is still April 1st or whatever it's supposed to be, I think this will fade away rather quickly.
Let's get to happier things. Over on 710sports.com, Brandon Gustafson did a deep dive on Robbie Ray on the Hill. He was a guest on Wyman and Bob Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised. Part of that was we saw a few reports that they were really tied to Kevin Gausman, who had a really, really fantastic year for the San Francisco Giants, and he wound up signing with the Toronto Blue Jays, which, funny enough, is where Robbie Ray starred for the Blue Jays last season. So I was pretty surprised by it. We just didn't really hear his name tied to the Mariners, and it was one of those things where you knew that they needed to go out and get one of these frontline starters in free agency or in the trade market or something like that. But I think myself, like a lot of other people, was pretty surprised that Ray ended up being the guy. But I mean, you could do a lot worse than signing the reigning American League Cy Young Award winner to anchor the top of your rotation, that's for sure.
Brandon, sorry to disappoint you, because Wyman isn't here, so your quota probably won't get hit. The son of a Gustafson quota, but I'll try to sneak it in six times, so there was one. But when you were digging into the numbers, and you kind of saw Robbie Ray's stuff, we talked about the strikeouts. Jerry DePoto mentioned what he can bring as the strikeout guy. All these numbers you wrote about in your article, which is, again, on 710sports.com, Mariners Breakdown, what to know about Robbie Ray. What jumped out at you when you really dove in and saw how impressive these strikeout numbers are?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that stands out that not a lot of people realize, I mean, he led the American League in strikeouts last year. He struck out about 250 guys, but he's arguably the most prolific strikeout guy in MLB history among guys that have 1,000 innings in their careers. He just reached the 1,000-inning threshold this last season. He has the most strikeouts of any pitcher in MLB history in their first 1,000 innings, and he has the career record for strikeouts per nine. He strikes out 11.2 guys per nine throughout his career. And it's just it's pretty impressive what he's able to do, especially because he's mostly a two-pitch guy. He's a fastball slider guy. He mixes in a curveball and a changeup as well, but he really focuses on those two pitches. He throws those combined about 90, 91% of the time. And that slider especially is really, really effective for him. He threw it a lot this year. He got more than half of his strikeouts with that pitch, even though he used the fastball a lot more. And he throws hard. He's a 95-mile-an-hour average guy from the left side, which is just some big-time stuff for a starting pitcher. But guys just did not hit that slider. Guys could not touch that slider. He absolutely excels at missing bats. So it's going to be a lot of fun to see the kind of punch-out numbers he's able to bring using those two pitches here.
What's changed with him? Because this isn't who he was the year before, certainly. And I know it was a goofy year for everybody out there in a shortened season. But, you know, you look at the seven games he had with Arizona, not a good run there, and then he ends up in Toronto and wasn't great in that half of the season either. Again, shortened season, but hadn't really, outside of one year in 2017, hasn't really been this guy. What's changed with him?
Well, he just commanded the strike zone a lot better. That's something that's really been an issue for him throughout his career. He's always been a fairly high walk guy. I mean, last year you mentioned his struggles with Arizona before he got traded. He walked 31 guys in 31 innings. I mean, he's walking a guy an inning last year before he gets moved over to Toronto. And then this year, he just totally cut down on that. He threw 193 innings. He walked just over 50 guys. So just a much better command of the strike zone with his pitches, and getting guys to chase obviously is a big part of that too. But just looking at him, I was looking at some video of him from his starts last year versus this year, or, you know, the 2020 season versus 2021. And a lot of it was the same. I know that he talked to Mike Salk yesterday about his arm tap and things like that, trying to shorten that potentially, and that not working out. And he, you know, and it really, it did look a lot the same, but he kind of was twisting more in his windup in 2021 versus 2020, and he looked like he was just getting down the mound a little better. He had a little more intent, and he gained weight in a good way. He looked a lot bigger. I mean, everybody talks about the tight pants and everything, but I mean, it's true. The guy put on some really good weight, and he was just throwing gas, which obviously helps to miss bats when you've got an elite slider like he has too. So, I mean, that's part of it. And I think that he kind of now knows what it's like to go a full season with that kind of success and that motion and everything. So it's going to be cool to see how he's able to build off of just a outstanding and stellar 2021 season.
See, that's what I need to do. Put on the good weight, not just weight. Put on the good weight.
You're not getting either kind of weight.
Well, maybe we'll have the tight pants.
You weigh 14 pounds.
You don't have to worry about that with me. My pants are the opposite way, the too loose pants. Hey, Brandon, you had another breakdown in this article about one potential area of concern. You say where he struggled was in terms of limiting hard contact, but there are some reasons that might not be as much of a concern here in Seattle. What kind of are the things that you saw about Ray and his hard contact and what might happen with him as a Mariner?
Yeah, I mean, if there was any knock on him in the 2021 season, it's just he found too many barrels. Guys were hitting him hard when they were able to get contact off of him. I mean, he had one of the worst average exit velocities among starters in all of baseball, even though he was out there just dominating most of the time. But he's going from the AL East, where you're playing the Yankees and the Red Sox, and even though the Orioles have kind of struggled, Camden Yards is historically pretty hitter-friendly, and then the Rays obviously have been extremely successful over the last few years. And coming out to the AL West, I think, helps a lot. The Astros should have another potent lineup, and the Angels have some guys, but it's a lot less dangerous coming out here to the AL West if you're a starting pitcher than making most of your starts over there in the AL East. I mean, he gave up, I think it was 33 home runs last year, and 21 of them were to AL East opponents. The Yankees roughed him up with about a 7 ERA, and then T-Mobile Park, pretty hitter-friendly, even though they moved the fences in a few years back, but the Marine Layer and early in the year and late in the year, you know, it's harder when it's not as warm to hit the ball out of T-Mobile Park. So I think that'll help him because, walks and home runs are two areas that throughout his career he struggled with, even though he's got the high punch-out numbers. But I think that making half of his starts here at T-Mobile Park will definitely help, and not going out and facing the Yankees and Rays all the time will definitely help as well.
We finish up the week with a hit from the Brock and Salk podcast. Both more than happy to talk baseball after another disastrous week of football. Mike Salk throwing out a dare-to-dream scenario. Could it happen?
The Mariners are surreptitious, right? They operate in secret a lot better than most other teams do, especially these days.
Kind of.
All right.
Jerry talks. I mean,
he does.
They balance those worlds really well. Like,
yes,
he is not afraid to talk
but
to
they
anybody.
Don't leak. This isn't the Mets. Right.
Yes.
I mean, like, they don't leak left and right. This is not me talking about any. I have no information here. As I said, nobody does. No one saw Robbie Ray coming. OK,
nope.
I'm going to paint you a complete scenario that I don't think is going to happen. But like, if it does, like, what if the Mariners looked at it and said, OK, 7 years for Semien. Yeah, it's too much for Semien, but that's where the market is. If we're going to do 7 years, we might as well do it for Carlos Correa. What do you think?
Yeah.
I mean, like, hey, yeah. If we're going to do 7 for Semien, if that's where the market is, maybe
right.
We'll do 8 for Correa. Let's go. I mean, like, I don't think that they're going to get Carlos Correa. I've never felt like that is the fit.
Mm-hmm.
But for all of the conversation of Bryant and Store, Bryant's got risk. I know Howdy loves him. Chris Bryant had one great year in 2017, his second year, his age 26 season. He had like a 7.5 war or something. He has never been the same player since then. There have been injuries. He's been a good player. But he has not been the same player since 2017, his second year in the league. Trevor Story is a really good player, and he puts up numbers, but it's been in Colorado, and he's had an elbow issue, and there are questions and concerns there. Would I like either of those two guys? Yes. Chris Taylor's a good player, but he's not in the same caliber mm-hmm. as those others in terms of carrying a team with his power and all of that. And Corey Seager, rather, was never an option. So maybe you're the Mariners and you say, all right, hey, I get it. Semien was our top choice and we thought we'd get him for 5 years, this and that. It didn't work out. But as long as we're at it, as long as that's where the market is, maybe they do see themselves as in the running for Carlos Correa.
Hmm.
He's a lot more of a sure bet than any of those other guys.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, I know they said it's J.P. Crawford's job. He's the one who actually won the Gold Glove over Crawford this year. Maybe there is a conversation there. Maybe they do find a way for that to work for those two guys.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's going to happen. It's probably unlikely. But just the way the Mariners kind of surprise you, sneak around, then the next thing you know, they're coming back with Robbie Ray in tow.
Yep.
Like, maybe they are big game hunting.
Yep.
Absolutely possible. I think it's even more likely that they've identified a team that's not ready to extend their young star.
Mm-hmm.
Think of somebody like Rafael Devers with Boston, that caliber of player, and says, all right, they're going to be a free agent in 2 years. Here's the number that the Red Sox don't want to meet. We'll trade you the prospects because we know what the extension price is for that guy.
Could be.
He's a cornerstone. He's ready to go. You have control. I could see them absolutely pulling off.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry is creative, if nothing else. And oftentimes he's thinking about players and ways of doing business that we're not thinking about. We try to think of the obvious stuff. Sign this guy. Sign that guy. Well, you didn't get Semien, so sign Story. That's not the way to run a baseball team. I'll be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. I mean, I would be excited, certainly, if they sign either of those guys. As long as that's who they want. You can't run a baseball team by saying, well, we didn't get the guy we wanted, so we'll take the next best thing and pay the same amount for him. You can't do that. That's no way to run a baseball team. If they don't think either of those two guys are great, they shouldn't sign him. They should absolutely bide their time, figure out another option. Maybe it is trading for Chapman. Maybe it's trying for a Devers type. Maybe it's looking into one of these 40-man situations with the Rays or somebody. Or maybe it's a team that doesn't want to extend their star.
Maybe it's Juan Soto in Washington, and they've got something that they just can't figure out there.
Maybe they are the team that wants to trade for Jose Ramirez, who's been out there as a possibility from Cleveland. Like there's a lot. I mean, you don't need to just. I think it's easy as a fan to kind of get into a box, and in the media too. I'm not putting myself above it. Well, here are the guys that are available. Get one. Well, if you don't get number one on your list, get number two. Because for us, it's just a rank list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. For them, it may be 1, 2, 3,
mm-hmm.
4. Like, they may have huge gaps between all of the talent levels of what they think those guys are worth. And they might be right.
Yep.
They wouldn't, would they? Is what he is suggesting completely out of the question? Maybe not completely. Definitely dare to dream territory, but would they stretch if Correa's market all of a sudden was to shrink? Food for thought. And with the lockout, we have all sorts of time for thought. We'll do this again next week. Until then, take care.